believe it. I just can't read the news. Another Bush in the White House got the double Bush blues. How can I bear it? I've just got one mind to lose. What a cruel deja vu. I've got the double Bush blues.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The U.S. Supreme Court declined on Monday to review four discrimination cases that resulted in judgments where workers received thousands of dollars. The employers say that the decisions should have been determined by a jury and not just judges. The four Massachusetts companies were trying to determine the constitutionality of a state law that allows workers to choose between a judge or a jury when presenting discrimination claims. It does not give employers the same right, and they claim it is not equal protection.
Labor's candidate didn't win the presidency, but this year's election was a win for New York Labor's third party, Working Families.
The Working Families Party actually had a very good November 2nd, I think providing a bright spot for progressives.
Alex Navarro, communications director for the Working Families Party of New York. By endorsing the same candidates as the Democratic Party, Working Families added 150,000 votes, and Senator John Kerry won 120,000 on the party's line. The party says it's culturally conservative but economically populist, focusing on increasing the minimum wage and drug law reform, as in the David Soares campaign.
David Soares ran for the office of district attorney, won the general election, campaigning to reform the Rockefeller drug laws.
The Working Families Party is hoping Soares' victory in Albany County will be a catalyst in the state legislature on drug reform.
Nigerian oil workers who plan to completely shut down that country's ability to export oil next week have been threatened with job loss. Nigerian Labor Minister Hassan Lawal says workers who participate in the nationwide strike not only forfeit their pay, but also lose their right to continuous employment. Nigeria is the fifth biggest source of U.S. oil imports and exports more than 2.5 million barrels a day. The country's oil refineries are in disrepair and cannot produce enough oil to meet domestic demand, forcing the government to import oil and sell it at a loss.
If you use your Dell, Gateway, or IBM computer to browse the Internet for news, here's some you may never have seen. All those companies export American jobs. If you're in the market for a new PC and you support organized labor, you might be interested to know that union-built PCs offer an alternative to the other major PC makers, a union-made computer competitively priced. Union-built PC is organized by locals from the Communications Workers of America, IBEW, and UWUA.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Employees in workplaces with no smoking restrictions smoke almost five more cigarettes daily than those that work where there is a complete smoking ban. That's according to a study by the University of Toronto's Tobacco Research Unit. One of the study's authors, Dr. Thomas Stevens, says that smoking bans not only benefit the health of non-smokers, but they also benefit the health of the smokers themselves. Many provinces in Canada still allow smoking in the workplace.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Even though Washington is spending billions of our tax dollars to defend the homeland from a biological attack by foreign terrorists, our leaders were asleep at the switch on the need to defend us from a biological assault that everyone knew was coming. The flu. This is a deadly matter, for flu kills about 36,000 of us every year. Yet the White House and Congress were totally unprepared when a British factory that supplied half of our flu vaccinations was shut down because of contamination. This gross failure of leadership means that millions of Americans will not get the shots they need this winter, and many will die as a result. This crisis is the result of rank incompetence and ideological stupidity by our political leaders. Of course, these so-called leaders are now trying to dodge their responsibility, claiming they couldn't have known about the contamination at the plant. Hogwash. The problems there were widely publicized months ago. Also, this is the second year in a row that our vaccine supply was botched. It's been a crisis waiting to happen, and now it has. But the real cause of the failure to protect our public health is Washington's insanely irrational pursuit of privatization and laissez-faire theory. Washington ideologues tied our nation's health to the profit whims of only two of the corporations that make flu shots, neither of which are even in the U.S. Other nations are not facing a flu shot crisis because they wisely get their medicines from many sources. Well, sniffed the politicos, U.S. drug makers don't find flu shots a profitable enough business, so what could we do? Hello, gooberheads. It's time to admit that the profit motive does not always serve the public interest, especially on health care issues. When corporations fail to meet the need, government must. This is Jim Hightower saying, people should not be dying because politicians are more interested in protecting their ideological purity than in protecting public health.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens. Monday through Friday. Check your local listing.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, between the death threats, the viruses, the give it up, loser, and the just totally strange emails that I've been getting about how actually it was the aliens from Vega 7 who hacked the vote because they wanted Bush to create a worldwide Armageddon because they want the human race to extinct itself so that the planet will be available to them. Well, amongst all these things, I've been getting some really quite remarkable emails as a consequence of the articles that I wrote last Thursday and Saturday that were first published on commondreams.org and then spread all over the Internet. One of the more well-known left-wing bloggers took the point that we were just only looked at. Yeah, took the point that the many of these counties where there were more in Florida, where there were more Democrats registered than Republicans, but more votes for Bush than for Kerry, that, you know, pretty much the same thing happened in 2000 in the Bush-Gore, and that's the Dixiecrat phenomena. And I acknowledge that. In fact, in the article I wrote for Common Dreams, I point that out. And but if you go to that article, that Sunday or Saturday article on Common Dreams, and you go to the link that Kathy Dopp put together on there, you can just click right off it and scroll down past the raw data and look at the graphs. You see these scatter graphs, you know, one of these little boxes with a diagonal line drawn through it. And in blue are the little dots of the counties that did not use the optical scan voters. And there you find that the vote is fairly consistent. The people you'd expect to vote Democratic voted Democratic. The folks you expect to vote Republican voted Republican. And then there's all these red dots. There's a sea of red dots off to the left. It probably should have been the right for political purposes, but off to the left of the graph. And those are places where people who should have been expected to have voted Democratic voted for George Bush. And those, by coincidence, are only the optical scan machines. And it doesn't make any difference whether it's a large county or a small county. It's not the Dixiecrat effect. And it's just remarkable to me the campaign that has been launched to say, oh, this is just the Dixiecrats. Hartman's nuts. Well, first of all, I'm not the one who did this, came up with the statistical analysis. It was a bunch of PhDs who do this stuff for a living. I just reported on it. So, you know, maybe it's nuts. Maybe I'm nuts. I mean, I'll comp to that. But in this case, no, number one. And number two, the only statistical variable that we could point to, that anybody could point to, was what kind of machine the votes were counted on. And that should be a huge red flag. And it is statistically significant, and you can see it there. I'll get into more details about that in just a minute. But welcome to our program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations from Oregon to West Virginia, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, back up. It's great to have radio power back up. They crashed right after the day of the election. Also, our chat room on CompuServe and the Democratic Forum crashed the day of the election. Lots of strange coincidences that day. And people had been complaining that they couldn't get into the chat room right up until yesterday. And last night, I had a conversation with Harriet, the sysop of the forum. And sure enough, they went into the guts behind the guts. And somehow, that forum had been set to only allow 15 people into it. Well, we regularly get a whole lot more than 15 people in the chat room for live chat. So what was happening was the 16th person, whoever tried to come in after 15 people were in there, got thrown back out again. They'd get in for 30 seconds and boom, off they go. So the chat room is up and running. You can get there by going to TomHartman.com. If you'd like to call into the program, our number 1-866-889-8894. One of the emails that I got this is actually a posting on our message board, which you can also find off TomHartman.com, was from a friend, let's say, somebody that works with us on the message board. And first of all, he says, Tom kind of swept this thing under the rug when I said, you know, let's get over it. My point, I made the comment, you know, let's get over this. Here's my point. The emotional trauma and drama, I think it's very important that we actually do get over that. It's time for us to go through those five stages of grieving and say, you know, even if Bush stole this election, we still have Republican majorities in the House and Senate. And even if that got stolen, odds are it'll never be found. And even if all of it was stolen, there's still a lot of people out there, a mind-boggling number of people out there, who believe that Iraqis were flying those jets on 9/11, who believe that going into Fallujah is revenge for the victims of 9/11. Of course it's not. It had nothing to do with it. It was Saudis who were flying the jets, 15 of the 19. No Iraqis on any of those planes. Iraq had nothing to do with this. Of course, I'm sure you know this, but the viewers of Fox News somehow mysteriously don't. People who listen to Limbaugh and Hannity, for some reason, don't know this. It's been in all the newspapers, but, you know, TV, news, it's the president himself has said it, but somehow they just don't know it. So anyhow, he says he's taking me to task for saying, let's get over it. I think that we need to, and the point that I'm making is that we need to get over the histrionics of it. I don't by any means think that we need to get over investigating this. We need to find out what happened and hold people accountable if there was a crime that was committed. And, you know, increasingly it's looking like there may have been. So my move-on call, as it were, was more of an emotional one, not a practical one. I intend to continue following this. I am. I've been talking to some fairly high-level folks in a whole lot of different areas. Keith Olbermann's producer called here yesterday. I mean, he did a great segment on this last night. It's up on his blog today. You can find it if you go to msnbc.msn.com and click on Keith Olbermann's thing. He's the only guy in the mainstream media who's had the courage so far to really take this on, and I salute him for it. And we'll just see where it goes. I mean, I think that really needs. And yet, at the same time,
We need to be organizing. We need to be educating. We need to be waking people up to the conservative agenda and the damage that it's doing to the United States and has been doing since the 80s when it first really started going whole hog, and what can be done about it. So, you know, it's I'm saying, you know, all these things at the same time. If you could, those of you who are sufficiently intellectually sophisticated to handle handle that ambiguity, I salute you. But I think it's where we need to go. We need to say, okay, this happened. It probably won't get reversed. We may or may not find a crime here, and we need to look for it and make sure and bring up this issue. We need to get these electronic voting machines out of our lives, or at least get them out of the hands of corporations that were started by families that believe the Bible should replace the Constitution, or that are run by Republicans from Ohio, or that are owned by Saudis, and put them in the hands of civil servants answerable to we the people. I mean, this is very simple stuff. And we need to begin educating and organizing to reinvigorate the labor movement in the United States, to re-empower the middle class and bring it back to life, and to bring honesty and integrity back into government and get corporate money out of it. That's my rant, and I stand by it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Robert in North Dakota is on the line. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
Oh, it's been difficult. But I wanted to, I guess, connect with you to let you know that as of I served in Vietnam, I was a Marine infantryman from 1967 through 68 and then in 69. Okay.
Those were tough years to be in Vietnam, Robert. That's, I salute your service.
Well, that isn't important. What's important is that your listeners understand something about why we fight, okay?
Yeah.
As infantrymen, as Marines, as soldiers, as sailors, as airmen, I suffered, and I still do, okay? And a lot of my friends didn't make it home.
Yeah.
Okay?
I
know. I'm going to try to hold this together so I can get this across to you.
Sure.
That at first we have high ideals and we believe and we're patriotic and the flag waving, all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And as it goes on and reality hits us of what it really is really all about, it's not about an enemy, or in fact you come to the point where your enemy, you have no hatred of him. In fact, you get a great deal of respect for him. And when you take their lives, or they take your friends' lives, you put it away somewhere. You lock it up, and you keep going.
Yeah, it's a tragedy.
But the thing is, they don't. The young men that I talk to at the bases, and I please don't say where I'm at because I don't want to, you know, people start questioning them.
Yeah.
The young NCOs and staff NCOs that I meet with and talk with are great American soldiers.
You're talking about the kids now who are going over to Iraq.
Yes, the ones that are coming back. I mean, I meet them all the time.
Yeah.
And I talk with them, and we have a great deal in common. And they don't. This is the hardest part to get across, is that somewhere along the line, somebody got the idea that these kids are wanting to free an enslaved people, or people that are, you know, liberate them, basically.
Right, liberate Iraq, yeah.
No, it's nothing like that. They're in the same situation I was in.
In Vietnam.
Seriously, we...
Robert, I absolutely agree with you. Last night, when I almost started to say Robert McNamara, Don Rumsfeld said on TV, and maybe you caught it, he said, no nation should have to deal with foreign fighters on its soil. I was screaming at the TV going, Don, we are foreign fighters on their soil, and they don't like it! Pardon my rant, Robert.
No, that's fine, Tom. I never heard of you before CNN. I saw that on CNN, and then I looked for you on the Clear Channel.
Yeah.
And I found your program, and I've been listening to it daily. I don't just take one point of view. I listen to the other side too. I listen to Newt Gingrich and his rant.
Yeah, so do I. Robert, we've got only about 30 seconds left here before we've got to take a break. So
I understand that, but
I know you wanted to make a point.
You're the crux of it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Please understand that these troopers are only fighting for one thing, their survival and the survival of their friends. That's it.
Yeah.
Period. In a nutshell, the guy that's standing next to you, that's why you fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has nothing to do with higher ideals. And people understand those kids are just trying to stay alive.
They're just trying to stay alive. Good point, Robert. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. I do appreciate it, and I appreciate your calling in. Hope you call in again. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Tonight, for the first time ever, Fear Factor goes to New York.
Yes!
Fear Factor's biggest episode in the Big Apple.
Blended rat!
Then, a crime that started on Crossing Jordan ends on an all-new Las Vegas. Two shows, one murder.
How do you like Vegas so far?
Kind of reminds me of home.
Then, it's the premiere of the $25 million hoax. Fear Factor New York, Crossing Jordan on Las Vegas, and the $25 million hoax. All-new NBC Tonight.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Robert's call from North Dakota there really raises this issue. What you heard was the face of war. I mean, war is not, it's not clean, it's not easy, it is brutal, it is painful. I have not been a warrior, but I have been in war zones. I was in Uganda in 1980 during the War of Liberation when Tanzania invaded to throw out Idi Amin. I've seen people die in war. And I'll tell you, when people get shot, at least what I've seen, it's not like on TV where, oh, whoa, and then they fall over. They thrash around, they scream, they limp, they drag themselves. I mean, it is horrible. And war, and this is something, of course, that the chicken hawks that put together this thing in Iraq, with one possible exception, none of them had seen this. They all had other priorities, to quote Dick Cheney, during the Vietnam War. And so they thought, oh, that's fine. We can make a war of choice, a preemptive war. While the rest of the world, particularly Europe, that had, there's almost nobody in Europe who hadn't seen war. This weekend, I was at a board of directors meeting for the New England Salem Children's Village and the Hunter School programs that, well, it's a whole long story. But anyway, I was visiting some friends on the way back, Ray Dune, who is from Norway. She was 7 years old when the Nazis came through and was telling me about that. I mean, people in Europe remember what war is. And that's why the European nations were saying to us, hey, before we engage in a war in Iraq, let's make sure that there's no other choice. Let's make sure that this really and truly is the last resort. And Bush said, no. Part of my reelection plan, as laid out by Karl Rove, you find it in Bob Woodward's book, is to be a war president. Got to have a war. And, I find it just amazing that one of the main talking points was, you know, Saddam killed a couple hundred thousand insurgents, people who rose up against him in the South, the Shia. And they, challenged his rule. Why? Because they were nationalists. They wanted their country back from the dictator. And we look at this, at that power of that nationalism and these thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who are willing to die for it. And it never occurred to us that that nationalism might extend to any country that tries to occupy Iraq. How could they have so miscalculated? It's mind-boggling. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Paul in California on the line. Hey, Paul, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Tom. Miscalculation, I somehow doubt that. But I want to actually bring you back to the voting irregularities problem from earlier. I voted in San Bernardino County out here in California, and we all got stickers that said, I voted electronically. I didn't. I actually attempted to vote via paper ballot because they told us in our pamphlet we had that choice.
Right.
Well, okay, so election day, there's a line probably about a half mile long due to the fact that they plug in 12 of these touchscreen voting machines into one outlet. Way to go, pollsters.
Yeah. Paul, we've got about 30 seconds here. I'm sorry.
Oh, sure. I'll wrap it up. Basically, I was told to fill out a provisional ballot, no matter the fact that my name was on the roll.
Uh-huh.
And I don't really feel my vote was counted because it may not have been necessary once they counted their imaginary electronic votes.
Yeah, and here, one of the stories, I've got a whole stack of voter stuff here to get into, and one of these is down in Florida. They're talking about, I believe it was in Broward County, they said, the quote was, we threw out these ballots by the ton, right? These provisional ballots. Here we are. Broward County Mayor Eileen Lieberman, speaking of provisional ballots, I think we threw out a ton of them.
Good.
Yep. So, anyhow, Paul, thanks for the call. We do have a problem here in the United States. We have to clean it up. And it has to do with private for-profit corporations having their fingers in our vote. Just one more part of the conservative agenda of turning our country over to the corporations.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Talk about unsanitary. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums or wear a dust mask. Imagine vacuuming your house wearing a dust mask. Friends, try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. It's 99.99% dust-free. Call 1-800-989-4200.
1-800-989-4200. Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The U.S. Supreme Court declined on Monday to review four discrimination cases that resulted in judgments where workers received thousands of dollars. The employers say that the decisions should have been determined by a jury and not just judges. The four Massachusetts companies were trying to determine the constitutionality of a state law that allows workers to choose between a judge or a jury when presenting discrimination claims. It does not give employers the same right, and they claim it is not equal protection.
Labor's candidate didn't win the presidency, but this year's election was a win for New York Labor's third party, Working Families.
The Working Families Party actually had a very good November 2nd, providing a bright spot for progressives.
Alex Navarro, communications director for the Working Families Party of New York. By endorsing the same candidates as the Democratic Party, Working Families added 150,000 votes, and Senator John Kerry won 120,000 on the party's line. The party says it's culturally conservative but economically populist, focusing on increasing the minimum wage and drug law reform, as in the David Soares campaign.
David Soares ran for the office of district attorney, won the general election, campaigning to reform the Rockefeller drug laws.
The Working Families Party is hoping Soares' victory in Albany County will be a catalyst in the state legislature on drug reform.
Nigerian oil workers who plan to completely shut down that country's ability to export oil next week have been threatened with job loss. Nigerian Labor Minister Hassan Lawal says workers who participate in the nationwide strike not only forfeit their pay, but also lose their right to continuous employment. Nigeria is the fifth biggest source of U.S. oil imports and exports more than 2.5 million barrels a day. The country's oil refineries are in disrepair and cannot produce enough oil to meet domestic demand, forcing the government to import oil and sell it at a loss.
If you use your Dell, Gateway, or IBM computer to browse the Internet for news, here's some you may never have seen. All those companies export American jobs. If you're in the market for a new PC and you support organized labor, you might be interested to know that union-built PCs offer an alternative to the other major PC makers, a union-made computer competitively priced. Union-built PC is organized by locals from the Communications Workers of America, IBEW, and UWUA.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Employees in workplaces with no smoking restrictions smoke almost five more cigarettes daily than those that work where there is a complete smoking ban. That's according to a study by the University of Toronto's Tobacco Research Unit. One of the study's authors, Dr. Thomas Stevens, says that smoking bans not only benefit the health of non-smokers, but they also benefit the health of the smokers themselves. Many provinces in Canada still allow smoking in the workplace.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Count a few more votes. All right, a few more votes over there. You can throw those ones away. No, we don't need those over there. You can get rid of those. We're not gonna share it with you. In Florida, for example, if you voted on the on e-touch machines, the folks who voted on e-touch machines, the unaffiliated voters, those who are neither Democrats or Republicans. This is a fascinating analysis of the website, thesquanderer.com. Bush's final tally, about 1.85 million votes, 28.6% more than his given base on e-touch voters. That's a close race as expected. On the optical scan voters, however, Bush got 45.8% more than his given base, and Kerry got less than 1% more than his given base, whereas on touchscreen machines, Kerry got 26% more than his given base. It all has to do with the kind of machine you voted on. And I suspect that that has to do with which machines are more easily hacked. But I may be wrong. We don't know. We don't know. But hopefully one of these days we will find out. Let's take a few more phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Sean in Houston, Texas on the line. Hey, Sean, welcome to the show.
Well, hi, Tom. I've been a listener for just a little while and thought I'd call in, and amazingly it rang instead of a busy signal.
Yeah, well, sometimes you get lucky.
I had a question, and then I wanted to ask, well, I had two questions. First one was about the, have you seen this little movie on the internet of Bush flipping the bird, to put it bluntly?
Yeah.
What I was wanting to ask was, has that been seen anywhere outside of the internet? Would the folks in Kansas have seen that?
I don't think anybody has. I don't think any of the national media have run it, or would, for that matter.
I don't know why they wouldn't, to tell you the truth.
Well,
I
think they don't, for the same reason that all the reporters who knew that Jack Kennedy was sleeping around constantly everywhere he went never talked about it. Mm. That when it comes to the president doing things that don't endanger national security and have to do with his private life, and people, you know, it was an open secret about Bill Clinton's horniness, shall we say.
Sure. Well, I guess
just kind of leave that alone.
If this had been a poster in a cornfield in Kansas, it might have changed some minds, and I was surprised that the Kerry people didn't jump on it.
I doubt it would have, frankly, Sean.
Maybe you're right.
Because I suspect that his supporters would have said, hey, somebody must have really upset him.
Let me ask you the other thing,
Sean. Just to continue on that, I mean, if you'd seen a movie of John Kerry flipping somebody the bird, wouldn't that be your response as a Kerry supporter?
I think that doesn't look very presidential. And I guess the reason I'm talking about Bush about it in this light is that this happened after he was the governor of Texas, and also after his born again thing happened. So he's not quite the guy that all those Christians out there thought he was.
Yeah.
That's where I'm coming from.
I thought it was interesting.
It would have been a little bit of a shock to people to see that.
I thought it was interesting. We learned last night from his tailor that his suits cost $3,000 a piece, and that he wears custom, handmade cotton. There's a name for the type of cotton shirts. I forget the name of it.
Well, they must cost that much to have that little space in the back where you can keep that receiver on his back.
From the planet Zeta or from Carl?
Carl,
one or the other. Yeah.
I also wanted to ask you about the first time I had seen you was on, I believe it was the Robert Greenwald documentary, Unprecedented, about the 2000 election.
Right.
And somewhere in there, which, by the way, I was really impressed then. I wanted to go out and get your book, listen to the radio show, and so forth, and I recommend that to people.
Well, it's a great documentary. Greenwald did a marvelous job with it.
And your clip on there was very good, too.
Thank you.
There was a statement in there, there's a lot of coverage about electronic voting machines, and in one place somebody was talking about a person who has an interest in a voting machine manufacturer who later ran for Congress, and his district had used these same voting machines which he had an interest. Do you remember who that is?
Yeah, it's Senator Chuck Hagel. I wrote an article about it.
Okay.
Chuck Hagel was the president of the company that became what is now known as ES&S.
And he's a senator from?
Nebraska. The company's based in Nebraska. When he was the head of the company, they sold their voting machines to Nebraska. They populated the entire state with them. Then he stepped down and ran for Senate. And it was the upset victory of the year, according to the Washington Post. Nobody expected that this obscure Republican who nobody knew about and who had no background in politics would win the Senate seat away from the incumbent Democratic governor, who was much beloved.
And
Hagel won votes in black areas that had never before voted Republican, ever.
How did the exit polls line up with the machine results?
To the best of my knowledge, there were none, or if there were, I've not been able to find them. But
the other
interesting little factoid on that was about 6 months after he won that victory, and along with it, Republicans swept into power in the state of Nebraska at the House and Senate level. The Nebraska legislature passed a law making it against the law to audit electronic voting machines in Nebraska.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Yeah.
And convenient.
Yeah, yeah.
Boy, well, I wanted to tell you that I read that IMUS in the morning this morning was talking about Florida and Ohio and the voting machine.
Oh yeah, this is hot stuff. This is hot stuff.
Yeah, apparently I had known that Olbermann had talked about it last night, but apparently it's carried on into today some too.
Yeah. Oh, it will, and he'll be back on it tonight. Sean, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Great to hear from you.
Call in again. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Matt in New Hampshire on the line. Hey Matt, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better.
Good, I'm glad to hear it. Hey, listen, my name is Matt, but you might as well call me Eeyore. I'm so pessimistic about the future of our party.
Our party.
I'm a Democrat. I'd like to think that, you know, there are quite a few of us out there. I mean, there are a number of us that showed up at the polls.
Yep.
But listen, I'm concerned. I mean, I just don't see any light at the end of the tunnel, you know?
Well, Nixon won by a much larger percentage everybody talks about the raw numbers, but the population has grown. So, of course, right. Every president has larger numbers than previous presidents. And there was this unprecedented get-out-the-vote drive on both sides. Nixon won by a much larger margin, and look at what happened to him a year and a half later.
Yeah, there's no question about that. But the thing is they didn't control the media then.
Well, they didn't control the House and the Senate. The problem,
right.
You know, the thing that was different between Nixon and Bush was that Nixon had a Democratic Senate to deal with, and so old Sam, what was Sam's last name? Anyhow, good old Senator Sam was able to begin his investigation, and that's what brought down the Nixon administration. But, you know, I am not despairing about this. These guys are already overreaching. The battles are already beginning inside the Republican Party, and increasingly, see, the bottom line, here's the bottom line. This is the ultimate reality, Matt. The ultimate reality is conservative economics destroy middle classes. They always have. Conservative economics only serve to create a small class of extraordinarily wealthy and powerful people and a very large class of basically the working poor, the terrified working poor. It's the world that Charles Dickens described in his book, The Christmas Carol. It's you have the Scrooge and Marleys of the world who own everything, and you have the Bob Cratchits who are, you know, afraid, terrified of losing their job if they don't show up to work these overtime hours that the president now just, you know, just a few months ago passed this new rule where the companies don't have to pay overtime. He's terrified that his son's going to die because he doesn't have health care, and on and on and on. That is the conservative agenda, and when you break it down, it always breaks right down to that, to cheap labor and to classes and structures in society, to quote Russell Kirk, who wrote The Conservative Mind back in 1954 and codified all this stuff. It's not invisible. People will wake up to it. They woke up to it in the 1920s and brought about the revolution of the New Deal, and they're going to wake up to it again because it's real. It's not. It's. Do you get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying, but you know, listen. I mean, do you have to be hit on the head with a hammer?
I think some people do. And particularly people who listen to a lot of right wing talk radio. You know, they really. It's going to take a lot to cause these people to wake up, and you know, a lot is coming down the road.
Tom, I hope for our country's sake you're right. I really do.
Well, we have been through this before, Matt. We've been through far worse. John Adams was throwing newspaper editors in jail for calling him toothless and bald. You know, we have been through worse, and we have survived.
I suspect it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah. Well, it may, but if it's going to get better, it's going to get better because people like you and I hang in there. And keep
right,
on spreading the word. Matt, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Thanks for what you do.
Yep. And by the way, tag, you're it. Pass the word along, okay? Thanks, Matt. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Millie in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Millie, welcome to the program.
Oh, what a great surprise to be on. Kevin Shelley, California's Secretary of State.
Yes.
Prohibited the electronic voting here.
Courageously, I think.
Pardon me?
Courageously,
and
in my
opinion. We're proud of him.
Yeah.
And he's taken a lot of flack from the radical right since doing that. But the radical right here is a minority, thank goodness, in this state.
Yeah.
We're working on educating the youth of this area, the Santa Cruz County and Barrons, regarding the coming draft. And I say that because I am positive it's going to come. This regime is so overextended that the draft will be a given, in my opinion. And listen to this. This is a little-known fact. There are 10,000 selective service draft offices manned and ready to go. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. We reported on that last year when they first started ramping them up.
Yeah,
yes.
That's true. Yeah. Well, good for you.
Yeah, and I suspect, Millie, that you're right and that the draft is going to come. However, there is an alternative, and it's the alternative that I suspect this administration will go for, and that is as conservative economic policies continue to drive more and more people out of the middle class and into poverty, there are more and more people who are looking for some kind of stable paycheck. And the military offers that, and pretty good benefits, actually.
Like Fallujah.
And well, you know, yeah. But not everybody goes to Fallujah. And people who join the military know, you know, that the odds of them ending up in combat are actually fairly slim. There's the, you know, we have, I don't know what our total military force is, but it's hundreds and hundreds of thousands, and only a small percentage of them are actually engaged in combat. And so I think that, frankly, if they simply increase pay and increase the incentives. I mean, right now, I think the sign-up bonus is like 10 grand. You get a $10,000 sign-up. They kick up that sign-up bonus. They're just going to get more people. I mean, the more terrified workers, the more Walmart workers that the conservatives can create with their war on organized labor, the more there are going to be people who are going to go into the military desperately, like Jessica Lynch did, you know, trying to get a college education. And this, Thomas Jefferson wrote about this. He said, we should not be a nation where our country, where our children will line up to be shot for a sixpence. And but that's what we have right now. And that, I think, frankly, is going to be their goal rather than the draft.
I just don't see where the money's coming from, Tom.
It's being borrowed from our grandchildren, Millie.
Pardon me?
It's being borrowed from our grandchildren.
Oh, of course. Well, I just want to end with this. In 1944, I was a volunteer ambulance driver. We carried out the dead and wounded from the Battle of the Bulge Theater of War.
You were in that was in France?
It was on the border of Belgium and Germany.
Belgium and Germany, okay. Thanks.
Yeah, and by the time the Antwerp port was readied for hospital ships, previously they had to be carried down to France.
Mm-hmm.
But by that time, by December 23rd, when the battle commenced, and it went on through January, the dead and wounded were carried by ambulance and trucks to Antwerp. But what I saw and experienced is with me to this day, and I'm 80.
I honor your service, Millie.
Yes, well, I wasn't in the armed services. I was a volunteer.
Yeah.
I was in the combat area.
Yeah.
But it's just incredible. You've given me something to think about with your assessment of whether there will or will be not be a draft. I think if enough of the youth are given this money and this opportunity, quote unquote, end quote. I don't.
Yeah.
I'm really against it, but I think you're right. That maybe we'll not have to have a draft.
Yeah, it's going to become the military has already become for large portions of America, particularly rural America, rural West Virginia, like where Jessica Lynch was from. I mean, there was a whole bunch of people in her regiment or whatever it was that were right from that same area. It has become the employer of last resort in these areas that are just being wiped out by the outsourcing and the economic policies of this administration to go to the lowest common denominator for labor and make it the most profitable for the big multinational corporations.
That's right. And in this area, it's very agricultural in Santa Cruz County, and there's a place called Watsonville where the general population is about 70% Latino, Mexican-American and Mexicans.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids do very poorly in school for the most part.
Yeah.
And they are really prey of the recruiters who come into the high school.
Oh, yeah. You know, Fahrenheit 9/11. Millie, thanks for the call. I appreciate
welcome.
It. You raise a really good point. And in Fahrenheit 9/11, you know, the whole thing, Michael Moore is going around with the recruiters. And where are they going? They're going into the disadvantaged areas. They're going into the areas where people are really struggling. People are really having a hard time. 1-866-889-8894. Alan in Little Rock. Hey, Alan, you got about a minute left here. What's up?
Yeah, you said one time that our companies can go over to Iraq and take out like 100% of the profit.
That's right.
And not have to pay any taxes or anything. And you also said that...
Oh, they have to pay 15%. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You also said that unions are banned over there, and I was wondering where I could find this information.
You can find it anywhere. This is in the Constitution, the new Constitution for Iraq that Paul Bremer supervised the writing of. You can just find it on the Internet. It's not a secret. It's public knowledge. It's right there in their Constitution. We forced them to write it into their constitution, something that they're not real happy about right now. And then we're surprised that we have these insurgent uprisings. Paul, Alan, thanks for the call. Good to hear from
thanks.
You. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number is the Tom Hartman radio program. Truth in broadcasting for a change.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund you money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272. How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend a project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
This is a wind feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. On Friday in Santa Cruz, California, 45 people turned out for a solidarity rally in support of embattled workers at Sunshine Villa. Wind correspondent Vinny Lombardo has more.
Santa Cruz should be where?
Sunshine Villa is unfair.
Yolanda Moya has worked at Sunshine Villa for more than 3 years as a certified nursing assistant. Since February, Moya has been a key organizer in the SEIU contract drive. She says workers workers at Sunshine Villa are underpaid and receive too few health benefits for the heavy workload.
Many times we were short staffing.
Workers also complain of mistreatment by Sunshine Villa managers. Moya says the situation results in poor service to the residents. Recently, she discarded a table ornament that a resident had been chewing on. Moya says it was a health hazard. Managers apparently disagreed.
On October the 5th, they suspended me because I threw away a plastic vegetable from the garbage. And on October 12th, they terminated me with no reason.
Union reps believe Moya was fired for her organizing efforts. In July, workers at Sunshine Villa voted by a margin of 4-1 in favor of union representation. Joe Keffer, organizing director with the SEIU Local 415, says Sunshine Villa lawyers immediately filed 25 challenges with the regional director of the NLRB in Oakland when Sunshine Villa attorneys appealed to Washington. Last week, Keffer says the NLRB certified the union.
So now we can go in, start raising the issues, and we'll start negotiating our first contract. We expect that they're going to come in there and fight us aggressively and challenge every word that we put on the table.
Joan Bosworth, executive director of Sunshine Villa, snubbed repeated attempts for comments on this story. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz, California.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, the Republicans have officially become conservationists. They don't want us wasting paper on ballots. Nope, shouldn't cut down trees to have paper ballots. It's unnecessary. Just drive your Hummer down to that polling place and push that button. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bob in California on the line. Hey, Bob, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Hey, going back two callers back, you were kind of going over the building the FDR-style coalition.
Yeah.
And I think that's a crucial perspective. One of the things I've been watching the blogs is a kind of fierce debate about either going further left or kissing up to the Republicans. And I think that's a really false perspective. I think we're kind of trapped in some of our positions, but the potential for a strong FDR-style coalition exists.
It's the only thing that will save the Democratic Party, Bob. I got to tell you, it's the only thing. If the Democratic Party goes back to its roots, back to saying we are the party of the middle class, of what Thomas Jefferson, when he created the Democratic Party, called the yeomanry and the plowmanry, the people who work by the sweat of their hands or their minds, rather than make a living sitting by the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive. If the Democratic Party goes back to that base, it may survive. If it doesn't, it's screwed.
Well, and I at work, I asked a lot of my tree trimming guys. They're ex-loggers who I knew had voted for Kerry. We talk about these things, and I was really prying through talking to them about, all right, what matters to you? And they don't like gun control, and they really have a problem with race preferences of any kind.
Yeah.
But they were gung-ho about the idea of economic opportunity for everybody and education for everybody and quality rural schools as well as quality schools in urban neighborhoods.
Yeah, and health care. I mean, these are the pocketbook issues. These are the issues, and the Republicans worked so hard and so successfully, whether or not the election was stolen, so successfully to divert our attention away from these pocketbook issues and put it instead on things like, you know, should men kiss, gay marriage, and the subtle vagaries of gun control and stuff.
Well, I also think, though, but the big thing out west, I mean, the conservatives out west are very different than conservatives in the south. Personal freedom really matters in the west. And when you talk about abortion or rights to get medical abortion.
Yeah. No, you're talking about the old
issue.
Yeah, I agree. You're talking about the old Barry Goldwater conservatives who are a little closer to libertarians. A good point you make, Bob, and thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. And we'll get into that some more in the next hour. It is so important, though, I think, that the Democratic Party go back to its roots. If it doesn't, it is doomed. And we begin that process. We begin that process. Whether you're in the Democratic Party or not, we begin that process with encouraging that.
Tom Hartman here with you, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And dare to say no.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com, 800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The U.S. Supreme Court declined on Monday to review four discrimination cases that resulted in judgments where workers received thousands of dollars. The employers say that the decisions should have been determined by a jury and not just judges. The four Massachusetts companies were trying to determine the constitutionality of a state law that allows workers to choose between a judge or a jury when presenting discrimination claims. It does not give employers the same right, and they claim it is not equal protection.
Labor's candidate didn't win the presidency, but this year's election was a win for New York Labor's third party, Working Families.
The Working Families Party actually had a very good November 2nd, I think providing a bright spot for progressives.
Alex Navarro, communications director for the Working Families Party of New York. By endorsing the same candidates as the Democratic Party, Working Families added 150,000 votes, and Senator John Kerry won 120,000 on the party's line. The party says it's culturally conservative but economically populist, focusing on increasing the minimum wage and drug law reform, as in the David Soares campaign.
David Soares ran for the office of district attorney, won the general election, campaigning to reform the Rockefeller drug laws.
The Working Families Party is hoping Soares' victory in Albany County will be a catalyst in the state legislature on drug reform.
Nigerian oil workers who plan to completely shut down that country's ability to export oil next week have been threatened with job loss. Nigerian Labor Minister Hassan Lawal says workers who participate in the nationwide strike not only forfeit their pay, but also lose their right to continuous employment. Nigeria is the fifth biggest source of U.S. oil imports and exports more than 2.5 million barrels a day. The country's oil refineries are in disrepair and cannot produce enough oil to meet domestic demand, forcing the government to import oil and sell it at a loss.
If you use your Dell, Gateway, or IBM computer to browse the Internet for news, here's some you may never have seen. All those companies export American jobs. If you're in the market for a new PC and you support organized labor, you might be interested to know that union-built PCs offer an alternative to the other major PC makers, a union-made computer competitively priced. Union-built PC is organized by locals from the Communications Workers of America, IBEW, and UWUA.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Employees in workplaces with no smoking restrictions smoke almost five more cigarettes daily than those that work where there is a complete smoking ban. That's according to a study by the University of Toronto's Tobacco Research Unit. One of the study's authors, Dr. Thomas Stevens, says that smoking bans not only benefit the health of non-smokers, but they also benefit the health of the smokers themselves. Many provinces in Canada still allow smoking in the workplace.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Like an outer space alien from a 1950s science fiction movie, the H-1B monster is back. H-1B is an immigration classification that has allowed high-tech corporations to import hundreds of thousands of low-paid computer engineers, programmers, and other skilled professionals from abroad, rather than paying the middle-class salaries earned by high-tech workers in America. These visas have been a primary tool used by CEOs to bust the salary levels of high-tech jobs, the very jobs that we were told were to be the source of upward mobility and middle-class opportunity for our citizens. At the height of the high-tech boom, greed-headed corporate executives wailed that they simply could not find enough Americans with the computer skills they needed. So it was imperative, they said, that they be allowed to bring in tech workers from India, Russia, and elsewhere to fill the gap. This was pure horse hockey. Far from a shortage of qualified U.S. workers, people with top-notch skills were practically begging for jobs and being rejected. The industry executives were creating a false crisis for one reason. They wanted to displace well-paid Americans with foreign workers who would take a third or less in pay. But horse hockey prevailed. With their campaign contributions and lobbying clout, they got Congress to triple the number of H-1B visas issued each year, and many Americans soon found themselves training their foreign replacements. Then came the high-tech bust, and hordes of workers of all nationalities were dumped by the CEOs. The H-1B visa levels were no longer an issue and were quietly dropped. But now that the tech economy is picking up again, instead of hiring Americans, the CEOs are wailing the same old tune about shortages, demanding that Congress give them more H-1B visas to import cheap workers to fill the new jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop these greed heads, call Wash Tech, 206-528-6264.
I'm just a cowboy who's got achy knees, and the joint pain they call osteoarthritis. I tried over-the-counter pills, they weren't right for me. So I tried some prescriptions, and they made me foggy. And that's when I found you, Celebrex, for joint pain relief, no more, no less.
Celebrex targets the source of pain and inflammation. It's non-narcotic. It doesn't make you foggy or slow you down. Ask your doctor about Celebrex celecoxib capsules. Celebrex should not be taken if you've had aspirin-sensitive asthma or allergic reaction due to aspirin or other arthritis medicines or certain drugs called sulfonamides. In rare cases, serious stomach problems such as bleeding can occur without warning. Tell your doctor if you have kidney or liver problems. To learn more, call 1-888-CELEBREX, visit Celebrex.com, or see our ad in Real Simple. Just one prescription Celebrex gives 24-hour relief.
Ask your doctor about Celebrex. Joint pain relief, no more, no less.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. I remember back, I think it was 1972. I may have the year off. This Thursday, Louise and I will have been married 33 years, I think. Maybe 32 years. Boy, you know, you're getting old when you can't. Anyhow, we were moving down to Detroit, and we had a whole bunch of our stuff. We'd moved a bunch of stuff. We had a whole bunch of stuff of our stuff in the back of this van that we owned that hadn't been unloaded yet, and we'd been driving around with it for a couple of days because we just hadn't gotten around to it. And it was the weekend, and we were going to go over to Windsor. Over to Canada and, you know, for lunch and just, you know, for some sightseeing and stuff. And we got to the Canadian border, in Detroit there. And the Canadians wouldn't let us in because we had this furniture in the back of the van. And they thought we were trying to sneak into Canada to live there, to move there. I tell you that story because in our chat room for the last 10 minutes, there's been this long discussion about, you know, should you move to Canada or not? I say, no, it's so important that we take back America, that we turn America. If Canada, if there is a country that borders the United States, and we look at that country and say, you know, they're doing something right, instead of going there, we ought to do that something right here. I mean, this is not rocket science. This is pretty straightforward stuff. And so let me encourage you gently to, setting aside the fact that I can tell you from personal experience, the Canadians are very good at turning people back at the border, that if they think they're trying to sneak in to live there. Beyond that, we are needed here. We are needed here more than ever before. This is not the time to cut and run. Yeah, what a horrible cliche, but it's not the time to do that. Welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you, about 9 minutes past the hour. TomHartman.com, our website. If you want to drop into the chat room and participate in that discussion, maybe you can talk Le Proletariat out of moving to Canada. help me try to... Yeah, we need you here! Our telephone number, our toll-free number, if you want to call in, 1-866-889-8894. This article on the voter fraud, two articles actually that I wrote on this topic over, one on Thursday and one on Sunday for Common Dreams, are really stirring things up. And it seems to be migrating now into the mass media. Keith Olbermann picking it up on MSNBC last night. The topic anyway. I mean, he didn't reference me, but... I got an email here from... is it J-O-B-E? I don't know if that's pronounced Hobe or Joby. Anyhow, I thought you might want to know that hackers are reading your article. Someone sent the article to the BugTrack mailing list. And the mod people have been heatedly discussing GEMS exploitation for over a year. So the hacking sites, the sites on the web where hackers hang out, are now enthusiastically discussing how to hack voting machines. Well, I'll tell you, it's really very simple. You go to Drive C. You go into the program files, into the GEMS program file, go into the local database folder, and there's a file in there that is a database file that contains the votes. And you just double-click on that thing, and you open it up in Excel or any program you want, database program. It comes in and boots up the computer and turns on the software, the now it's an electronic voting machine software, because these are Windows PCs, by the way. They will see the numbers as you adjusted them, and they will see no audit trail. You don't leave any fingerprints when you do this. Howard Dean and Bev Harris did it on national TV in 90 seconds, hacked an election. When Howard was filling in for Bev on the Topic A with Tina Brown show. Sarpy County election officials are trying to figure out how they ended up with more votes than voters in the general election. 10,000 extra votes. Looks like 3,342 people voted. Only 3,000 people registered to vote in that ward, this particular ward. Johnny Boykin is a little concerned about this. He lost his race by 127 votes, and 342 more people than were even registered actually seem to have voted. They say this affected 32 of the 80 precincts in Sarpy County. I'm not sure what state this is. I've got this Sarpy County. It's for Channel 6 News. Well, anyhow, Boulder County, Colorado, they actually counted all the ballots pretty much by hand in this district, resulting in a dramatic delay in election results. This is interesting, of course, because Boulder County is only one of a handful of Colorado counties certain to vote Democratic. If you look at the election results, voter turnout was above 85%. This is a university town, 30,000 students. So Boulder's results were not included in initial results for the state that came out, making Bush's win seem much bigger. And this correspondent says, I wonder how many other counties used a combination of these two companies' equipments had similar problems. So anyhow, that's the voting stuff. Was the vote hacked? Maybe. Did Bush do really well? Did he turn out his base? Did he get a lot of votes? Did the Republicans control the House and the Senate? Yes. That's the reality that we have to deal with. And, at some point, the discussion has to begin really seriously focusing on that. You know, what do you do next? Yes, if there was a crime committed, let's find out, number one. And number two, let's get corporations out of our vote. Those are very important issues. But let's not let them obscure the larger issue, which is that we are now in day 7 of corporate rule of America. The thing that, that Thomas Jefferson tried to write into the Bill of Rights to prevent, he wanted in the Bill of Rights, he wanted there to be a ban on corporate monopolies, specifically for this reason. That they had seen a huge transnational corporation, the British East India Company, corrupt a government, and they never wanted to see it happen again. And we have had many efforts along the way. In 1881, the Sherman Antitrust Act and all the iterations, you know, therefrom, you know, half a dozen different variations of that since then, to keep this in place, laws that used to say that a corporation could only do one thing, it could not own other corporations, the books had to be open and available to we the people to inspect at any time, they had to serve the public good as their first purpose for existing, and so on and so on. And you're going to see all this stuff just thrown out the window. It's all going to be thrown out the window. Our quote for the day from Robert Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy. There are millions of Americans, he said, living in hidden places whose faces and names we never know. But I have seen children starving in Mississippi, idling their lives away in the ghetto, living without hope or future amid the despair on Indian reservations with no jobs and little hope. I have seen proud men in the hills of Appalachia who wish only to work in dignity, but the mines are closed and the jobs are gone, and no one, neither industry or labor or government, has cared enough to help. Those conditions will change. Those children will live only if we dissent. So I dissent, and I know you do too. Robert Kennedy, our quote for the day. Microsoft just settled a huge antitrust judgment. There's a huge lesson in this, and I want to get into that. But our phone lines have been lit up ever since we got on the air. I know a lot of people want to talk about the election, a lot, some of these other issues. Let's get through this. Let's take a few of these calls here and move this along. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Jim in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
How are you today? You guys need to get over the fact that you lost two in a row, you know? I mean...
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree with you, Jim.
If they, you know, if the Democrats change their way and I want to take away my guns and such, you know, I don't think the Republicans want to drink dirty water, you know, and live in a trashed-out place.
Then why is it, Jim, if that's the case, if Republicans don't want that, why is it that Republicans went along with George Bush cutting back on clean water standards and clean air standards?
I don't believe they have.
Oh, well, then you're not reading the papers. I mean,
well, I don't believe about half of what I believe in a paper.
Well, then you're not reading the Republican. Trust me, I'm telling you the truth. You know, Bill Clinton had established standards that would have cut the mercury in the air coming out of power plants by 90% by now. George Bush cut those standards radically back and allowed industry to essentially police itself. And now we've got a situation where there's so much mercury in our air and water getting into our fish and getting into women who are pregnant that we're having an epidemic of autism. And Bush calls this his Clear Skies Initiative. It was a rollback of the standards. Now, you know, I understand that, you know, you think you're a Republican and you think you're in favor of clean air, but you can't have it both ways.
Well, what about them people like you're saying down in West Virginia, okay? They have nothing to do. Who's stopping them from mining their coal and using their coal to get away from the oil? You know, why can't we go up to Alaska and drill the oil up there?
Well, the quote that I
heard
from Robert Kennedy was about the working people in West Virginia. They don't own the coal mines, so they can't make those decisions. With regard to the oil up in Alaska, and certainly I think we have to recognize the fact that many Alaskans want that oil to be pulled out of there. That's enough oil to supply the United States with all of its oil needs for 6 months. That is not going to solve our problems. With regard to why there's, you know, the price of oil is exploding, it's exploding because China and India are industrializing so rapidly that worldwide demand is running around 72 million barrels per day, and worldwide production is at 74 million barrels per day. Now, back, you know, 5 years ago when worldwide demand was around 63, 64 million barrels per day, you know, there was more supply than there was demand. The price was lower, but demand is going up. I think that this will balance itself out. We're going to see the price of oil come back down because people are going to start conserving. But, you know, whether or not to drill in Alaska, again, the only people who are really aggressively pushing for that are the folks who live near it who are going to make, you know, it's jobs, and a couple of oil companies who, even though it's 6 months' worth of oil for the United States, it's $4 or $5 billion in profit for ExxonMobil and Shell and the companies that are propping up George Bush. So they make it a big deal.
Okay. Well, I'd like to talk some more, sir, but I'm a truck driver, and I need to go out and go to work here a second.
Okay, good plan, Jim.
But thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling and having a respectful disagreement with me. I do appreciate it. It's 19 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Sean in Indianapolis. You've got about a minute left, Sean. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Tom, I just want to tell everybody out there that 98% of the hackers that are out there are really, really, really good people, and they really care about our democracy and the world.
I know you're speaking as a hacker, Sean.
Well, as an ex-hacker, I got busted in 89,
yeah.
But I still keep up with the culture, and, you know,
yeah,
the
just
hackers start doing things for their own personal, financial, or yeah, personal gain.
Then it's wrong. Yeah, I got it. And I think, you know, I find it fascinating that the hacking community is like really getting into this vote thing. I think that's, you know, they will probably uncover it faster than the news media does. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. $5 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Tonight, for the first time ever, Fear Factor goes to New York.
Yes!
Fear Factor's biggest episode in the Big Apple.
Blended rat!
Then, a crime that started on Crossing Jordan ends on an all-new Las Vegas. 2 shows, 1 murder.
How do you like Vegas so far?
Kind of reminds me of home.
Then, it's the premiere of the $25 million hoax. Fear Factor New York, Crossing Jordan on Las Vegas, and the $25 million hoax. All-new NBC Tonight.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace.
The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
You want to win the game, you got to make the rules. We stole an election right in front of you fools. Our terrorist system got you on your knees while we're picking your pockets and snatching your cheese. We got the USA by its curly short hair, so look out below, here come the billionaires.
It's the billionaires for Bush, they're back.
The billionaires are in the White House. We're sucking your blood like a floating louse.
Yeah, the billionaires are back. The billionaires, definitely.
Jim's call is, it makes me it's kind of poignant, because I know that there are a lot of you know, well-intentioned, well-meaning, good, honest, hard-working, good in their heart people who voted Republican in this election, and I honor them. And I think it's just tragic that they've been so misled by this administration. You know, the Clear Skies Initiative that was dirty, dirty skies. The Healthy Forest Initiative that was a gift to the lumber companies. The No Child Left Behind Act that was a gift to the educational testing companies that lobbied for it. And then has really badly scrambled our schools. Here in Vermont, we're planning to pull out of this thing. Or it's being debated. Altogether, just turn down the federal money, because it's just, you know, it's too much. And you get it, you know, and I think eventually people are going to get it, that the conservative agenda is a corporatist agenda. And again, for the 5,000th time, I want to say I have no problem with corporations. In fact, it's a marvelous thing that you can incorporate. I think the corporate form is a wonderful thing. You know, I've started a bunch of corporations in my life. I've made money starting corporations, running corporations. That's fine. But when corporations begin to behave in ways that are harmful to democracy in the United States, or that are destructive to the to our environment or to our world, then we the people have not just an opportunity, but an obligation to say, sorry, you've stepped over the line. It's just like saying, you know, it's just like the umpire saying, you know, you didn't touch third on the way around. There are rules to this game, and you have to play by the rules. Very, very straightforward. And Microsoft, for example, here, this is just a great example of this whole thing. Microsoft just paid $536 million to Novell Incorporated, a rival company. Novell had backed the antitrust complaints by the U.S. government and the European Union. Today's Associated Press story by Ted Brightus, Novell, a bitter decades-long rival of Microsoft, said despite the huge payoff, it intends to file an antitrust lawsuit against Microsoft this week. This having to do with the WordPerfect software. The European Union, which has determined Microsoft abused its industry dominance, fined it $600 million. They're expecting another one this month. Microsoft, just in their financial disclosure documents on Monday, said they expect that they're going to have to pay $950 million in additional fines for this. It's not really that much of a problem for them. I mean, they paid $2.4 billion to Sun and AOL Time Warner for violations of antitrust laws. But Microsoft is sitting on $64.4 billion in cash, sitting in the bank drawing interest. So if they behave poorly and they have to pay a few fines for it, they don't really worry that much about it, frankly, it appears. And this is a symptom, in my opinion, of this problem that we tried to address with the Sherman Antitrust Act. Then when Reagan stopped enforcement of the Sherman Act in the 1980s, and we had this mergers and acquisition frenzy where companies got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, we began down that slippery slope that has led to not just the destruction of the middle class, but the elimination of many entrepreneurial opportunities. You start a small business now and you've got a good idea, and you know, it used to be you'd build that business up and run it for the rest of your life and support your family with it, have a little, you know, the corner diner or whatever it may be. Now it's you wait until the big company comes in and either squashes it like a bug or buys you out. Everybody is starting businesses with buyout strategies. It this is not healthy for America. It is not healthy for our economy to have this sort of activity be going on by the largest corporations in America. 29 minutes past the hour.
Tonight, for the first time ever, Fear Factor goes to New York. Yeah! Fear Factor's biggest episode in the Big Apple.
Blended Rat!
Then, a crime that started on Crossing Jordan ends on an all-new Las Vegas. Two shows, one murder.
How do you like Vegas so far?
Kind of reminds me of home.
Then, it's the premiere of the $25 million hoax. Fear Factor New York, Crossing Jordan on Las Vegas, and the $25 million hoax, all-new NBC tonight.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The U.S. Supreme Court declined on Monday to review four discrimination cases that resulted in judgments where workers received thousands of dollars. The employers say that the decisions should have been determined by a jury and not just judges. The four Massachusetts companies were trying to determine the constitutionality of a state law that allows workers to choose between a judge or a jury when presenting discrimination claims. It does not give employers the same right, and they claim it is not equal protection.
Labor's candidate didn't win the presidency, but this year's election was a win for New York Labor's third party, Working Families.
The Working Families Party actually had a very good November 2nd, I think providing a bright spot for progressives.
Alex Navarro, communications director for the Working Families Party of New York. By endorsing the same candidates as the Democratic Party, Working Families added 150,000 votes, and Senator John Kerry won 120,000 on the party's line. The party says it's culturally conservative, but economic populist, focusing on increasing the minimum wage and drug law reform, as in the David Soares campaign.
David Soares ran for the office of district attorney, won the general election, campaigning to reform the Rockefeller drug laws.
The Working Families Party is hoping Soares' victory in Albany County will be a catalyst in the state legislature on drug reform.
Nigerian oil workers who plan to completely shut down that country's ability to export oil next week have been threatened with job loss. Nigerian Labor Minister Hassan Lawal says workers who participate in the nationwide strike not only forfeit their pay, but also lose their right to continuous employment. Nigeria is the fifth biggest source of U.S. oil imports and exports more than 2.5 million barrels a day. The country's oil refineries are in disrepair and cannot produce enough oil to meet domestic demand, forcing the government to import oil and sell it at a loss.
If you use your Dell, Gateway, or IBM computer to browse the Internet for news, here's some you may never have seen. All those companies export American jobs. If you're in the market for a new PC and you support organized labor, you might be interested to know that union-built PCs offer an alternative to the other major PC makers, a union-made computer competitively priced. Union-built PC is organized by locals from the Communications Workers of America, IBEW, and UWUA.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Employees in workplaces with no smoking restrictions smoke almost five more cigarettes daily than those that work where there is a complete smoking ban. That's according to a study by the University of Toronto's Tobacco Research Unit. One of the study's authors, Dr. Thomas Stevens, says that smoking bans not only benefit the health of non-smokers, but they also benefit the health of the smokers themselves. Many provinces in Canada still allow smoking in the workplace.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
relentlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. If you want a hotline in, you can call 1-802-229-2288. That'll get you in, too. And, in fact, Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. So after the election, I decided I wasn't going to listen to anybody else's exit polls, so I went door-to-door in two different communities here. I talked to over 100 people, and I asked them who they voted for and why.
Uh-huh.
And
that's fascinating. How long did that take?
All week.
Wow. Okay.
And which is why I'm calling you now.
Yep.
And, I think it's like 127 people.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, what it came down to was this. Basically, they didn't vote their pocketbook. They voted against their own economic self-interest. And we're a poor state.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because this one woman, one young lady, late 20s maybe, said to me, well, what it came down to was this, Chuck. If I've got somebody outside my window in the night trying to pry my window open, do I care if I hear somebody saying, well, what about health care or what about my income?
Yeah.
I want blue and red flashing lights and two big policemen to arrest
right.
the guy.
In other words, fear triumphed.
It was fear absolutely triumphed. Tom, it was a good 75%.
Wow. Of the people who basically they thought that the terrorists were going to come and get them right there in Albuquerque.
Yeah. I mean, here where they it would never happen.
And isn't it ironic that in New York City, where the terrorists actually did come and get them,
yes,
that in New York City, where they have seen the terrorists face-to-face, metaphorically speaking anyway, I mean, there wasn't much face left, but you know what I mean. They
yep.
have seen their actions, certainly. New York City, which is probably going to be, if there are future terrorist actions, certainly high up on the list of places that that any terror group would want to come after.
Yep.
New York City that voted overwhelmingly in favor of John Kerry.
I know, and it's just I look at this, and I've been listening to you for the past week, you know, about what do we do next?
Yeah.
And I don't know what to say. I'm stunned. I personally talked to 127 households, and that's what I'm getting.
Yeah, the campaign of fear worked.
It really did.
Karl Rove did his job. Well, you know, this presents a real challenge to us. I think, you know, it's Chuck, you've identified a boy. That's really remarkable. You've identified a really significant issue, I don't have an instant answer for you. I mean, I'm almost speechless on this. And of course, we've been talking about this for months. You know, it's George Bush. Here's what obviously failed to happen. That, for example, that young woman you talked to, nobody said to her, well, you know, if you're worried about somebody prying your windows open, in other words, if you're worried about terrorists coming to get you, by going into Iraq when it represented no threat to us and inflaming the Muslim world, George Bush has increased the probabilities of that happening here.
Well, you know, a funny thing, you should mention that, Tom. I had an analogy that works pretty well out here, I thought. I said, what happens if you go out and there's like a hornet's nest or a beehive and you start poking it? What's going to happen?
Yeah. Yeah.
And she looked at me like I was from Mars.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. That's because, some 70+% of these people believe that we're in Iraq because it's payback for 9/11. They don't realize that Iraq had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11. Or they think we're in Iraq because Iraq was about to attack us, and Iraq didn't even have any weapons to attack us with.
Yeah.
And so, but anyway, Chuck, thanks for the call.
That's my personal report from the field.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Thanks. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-888-94, our telephone number, or 1-802-229-2288. Get you in fast. Victoria Jones is on the line with the Talk Radio News Service, our report for the day from Washington, D.C. Hey, Victoria.
Well, hey, how are you?
I'm wonderful. What's up?
Well, it's an encouraging day, some would say, down on Pennsylvania Avenue and 17th Street, because as of about noon today, for the first time for as long as I can think, you can actually walk along Pennsylvania Avenue in front of the White House.
Oh, interesting.
Without having your view obscured by all kinds of things, because today the walkway, which is a really wide area, was officially opened by the First Lady. Doesn't mean cars can go through, but it does mean that once again, as a tourist, you can stand there and have your picture taken right in front of the White House.
Now, the state of emergency, I remember there was a state of emergency that was declared some months ago.
Yes.
You and I had talked about this, and I said, I think that this is for the RNC. Is that still in existence?
Well, it's not mentioned as being in existence, but seeing as all the barriers that went up haven't come down, it either is still in existence or, oops, guess what? They managed once again to restrict our movements and got away with it.
Yeah. Victoria, I have a question for you.
It's never going to stop.
I have a question for you.
This is
something I haven't been able to find the answer to. Hang on just a second.
That I can. Because you're brilliant.
Excuse me, I had to cough there. Bless you. Thank you. This army of lawyers that John Kerry hired,
yes,
and that they had deployed all over the country, they were going to challenge these elections, blah, blah, blah. Now that there are all these reports coming out of irregularities, and nobody has yet said we've found a smoking gun, but there's a lot of smoke. And are these lawyers still on the job, or were they called off?
No, that's very interesting. I don't have a clue. And that very silence tells me that maybe nobody's investigating anything. Maybe they all gave up and went home
after those three nights in
Motel 8.
Can you track that down for us?
I'll do my best to find out.
You know, I clicked that donate button and sent $25 off to John Kerry's fund for his post-election lawyers. I know he raised $14.5 million, I think it was.
Oh yeah, the Republicans raised more, of course, but nevertheless, it was a sizable sum. Maybe the feeling is that in light of the loss, there's no point.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to know what happened to those folks, and if they're still around, I'd like to know what they're doing, and if they're not still around, I'd like to know who called them off. Was it Terry McAuliffe or was it John Kerry?
I wonder if John Kerry doing anything?
I don't think so. I think, you know, he's probably off licking his wounds. Well, he's still in the Senate, you know. So.
I know. Can you imagine how it feels?
No, I can't. I really can't.
I don't
imagine.
Want to.
Yeah. So what else is in the news there in Washington, Victoria?
Well, I was at Scott McClellan's press briefing today, and today he dodged questions on Yasser Arafat's health or lack of it by saying it was premature to talk about basically anything. He said the president's being updated on a regular basis. When he was asked what regular means and who's involved in the updating, he declined to answer that question also. So that's one thing that's going on. Meantime, I'm sure you asked. Senator Chafee from Rhode Island apparently was thinking of changing sides, Democrats, and has been persuaded, i.e. had a horse's head put on his pillow, by his fellow Republicans to stay with the Republicans, being told apparently that his view is valued.
Yes. His view is valued, and if he wants his kids to survive.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Increasingly, the Tom DeLay faction, Tom DeLay, Bill Frist faction of the Republican Party is looking to me like a mafia, like an organized crime ring.
That's why I mentioned that horse's head.
Well said. Okay.
And other than that, it's fairly quiet. Next week, the lame duck session will start. Obviously, there are going to be budgetary issues that they're going to be looking at. But people are starting to jockey for position. There doesn't seem to be any development today on the Arlen Specter flap, which has certainly not gone away. I mean, he's basically been told, look, if you toe the line, maybe we'll let you be chairman. But towing the line, of course, means going down the line completely with a vote that is acceptable to the Republican Party. Scott McClellan was asked about this. And he said that the president plays absolutely no role in who is the chairman of any committee in the Senate, that's something that the Senate does itself.
Right. And if you believe that, I have a bridge to Sawyer. And now you got John Thune jockeying for the position, and he's not even a senator yet. I mean,
indeed.
It's amazing. Victoria, thanks for the report, and thanks for the update.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you, as always, and I look forward to finding out what you can find out about all those lawyers.
I'll see what I can find. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye now. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, or 802-229-2288. And Owen in Stanford, Connecticut on the line. Hey, Owen, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much. I had read your article you recently wrote regarding the issues with rural counties and the optical scanning ballots down in Florida.
Yeah, let me just correct something there, Owen.
Yeah.
I did two versions of that article. The first one was based on some information I got that was second sourced, and it suggested that the problem was in the small counties, not in the big counties. That got published on Common Dreams. In fact, it was the headline up at the top. And in the midst of the day, I heard from, or we were able to get a little more information and discovered that, in fact, that was wrong. It wasn't just the rural small counties. In fact, it had nothing to do with the size of the county. It had nothing to do with anything except which kind of machine counted the vote. And it was consistent whether the counties were large, small, or in between size. Mm-hmm. So I rewrote the article and republished it. So some people,
right.
An article that contained actual factual errors that I wrote was up on the web for about 3 hours, and it's been circulated. And, hopefully people have seen the updated version. So I just want to throw that caveat.
Right.
It was my fault.
No problem. What I wonder is, you mentioned about how there's a lot of smoke but no smoking gun. This would seem a situation where a smoking gun could easily be unveiled, because if it indeed is misreading of paper through an optical scan or a hacking of a computer after the fact, wouldn't they have the paper ballots that were originally scanned stored somewhere that somebody could hand count them and see if they matched?
Yeah, I've gotten about 400 emails asking that same question in the last 3 days. And
one of them for me.
Yeah, and the answer is probably yes. However, my understanding is that for those paper ballots to be pulled out, dusted off, and re-scanned or evaluated would require not just the cooperation, it would require a request to come down from either Glenda Hood or Jeb Bush. And
couldn't one ask for a court order for them?
I don't know. Speaking of hornet's nests, we were using that metaphor with Chuck just a few minutes ago about Iraq. This is a hornet's nest that I think has been kicked over. We have no idea yet what's going to come out of it. But there's... hang on. The story's not over. That's all I can say. It may well be that this is just a little statistical glitch. It's just an anomaly. It may well be that the election wasn't hacked. In fact, frankly, my sense of it is that probably the election was not hacked.
Mm-hmm.
Or that if it was, that it was in various places around the country on, opportunistic hacking, as it were. I think that Greg Palast is probably right that the real voter fraud was the disenfranchisement of people in minority communities, giving lousy machines to people in African-American communities or communities that principally vote Democratic, machines that are more likely to fail. Those kinds of things, challenging voters so that they have to put in provisional ballots. Those kinds of things. And even larger than that, we just awarded the prize on our October surprise contest on our message board, who was going to accurately predict the October surprise, to a person who predicted that the October surprise would not come in October, that the October surprise would come in November, or there would be none because the election was set up either by the lies that were told about the issues, that is, keeping people away from the issues, or that the machines were rigged. And,
right.
So I just have to say, I don't know.
Although you have to wonder, I saw some other statistical analysis today that looked at, this whole issue of the discrepancy of the exit polling results from, the actual voting results. And one would expect, basic statistics. I love statistics myself. I have a master's in business, so of course I follow statistics closely.
Yeah.
That, if you saw a variance between those two, that sometimes it would show, variance in one direction, sometimes it would show variance for the other candidate, and yet across the board, the variance was consistently where the exit polls showed higher, a higher number of people saying they had voted for Kerry and the actual results being less. And you should have seen an equal balance of that error on both sides.
I agree. And the same thing with the difference between the different types of voting machines. And this is the point that Keith Olbermann raised on his show on Friday night, to his credit. Why is it that all the errors that we've been hearing about on, you know, in all the in the news stories, in the mainstream media, the blogosphere, everywhere, have been about how mistakes accrued to the benefit of Bush and to the detriment of Kerry. You would expect there to
my,
be...
My cynical nature says that nothing, as you said, nothing will likely come of it, but if you said there's yet, you know, information to be heard, one would hope it happens quickly, because once the Electoral College votes, no matter what, you know...
But that's a month from now. You know, that's a month from now. It's December 13th or 14th, one of those days. And so, you know, it's there's still time. But again, I think that, you know, the Jim's advice in Grand Rapids, who called in at the top of this hour, where he said, you guys got to have to get over this. And you know, that's also good advice, that we need to also deal with the fact that there's a very strong Republican presence or conservative presence in the country right now. And it's there in large part because they've pulled the wool over people's eyes. They have succeeded in fooling people and into voting against their own best interests, and they've done it by dividing. Rather, you know, it's the divide and conquer strategy, and it's working. And we need to counter that.
I thought the best example of that was Al Franken's Lies, Malign Liars. They tell them he has a chapter in his book about the waitress and the rich woman lawyer, and how the waitress keeps on giving these arguments, thinking that she's better off under the Bush presidency, and the rich lawyer says, "No, you're not," and it's really that terrible. And then the waitress says, "Well, why are you voting for him?" She said, and the lawyer says, "Well, I make $600,000 a year or so."
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
So,
and
thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Andra in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, welcome.
Hi. I was wondering if you could point me to a website or article or something where I could get actual numbers on the alleged voter fraud. Like, I have a vague memory of something in Gahanna or New Albany or something where the numbers were actually totally reversed, or
Well, with regard to the Florida stuff, if you find my article on Common Dreams from Saturday, go to commondreams.org and just click on that. I haven't put it on our website yet.
Okay.
There is buried in there a hyperlink to a page that has those actual stats, and then that has links to the state stats. That's just for Florida. Nationwide, I'm not sure. I'd check out blackboxvoting.org. I think people are just starting to pull this stuff together right now, Andra. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. George Bush will remain in the White House, and with Republican control of both the House and Senate and freed of re-election concerns, he has free rein to impose a so-called ownership society. This buzzword stands in for a host of policies Republicans are itching to thrust upon America.
I'd say that the hallmark of the ownership society is privatizing Social Security.
Gretchen Young is the Vice President of Government Affairs for Ann Consulting.
The two other major elements in the benefits arena are health savings accounts, where individuals take more responsibility, and then there's also an element in the retirement part of the agenda, which would emphasize something called a lifetime savings account.
Young says under the president's proposal, individuals would get a $300 grant to seed their health savings account, or HSA, and a $700 tax credit.
For people who did not want to go the HSA route, they would get a $3,000 tax credit for purchasing family health insurance, or $1,000 for purchasing individual health insurance. So these will not cover the cost of health insurance, but these will certainly go a long way to helping these individuals get health insurance.
Ownership society, what you find is that it's talking about ownership, but it mentions nothing about the precursor of ownership, which is income.
Jack Minnis is an economist.
Everything that Bush has done in the 3.5 years he's been in office is to curtail or suppress consumer income. And how one gets from lack of income to ownership is a mystery unless he is prepared to legalize bank robbery.
According to the Tax Foundation analysis of IRS statistics, 58 million income-earning households pay no income taxes, 94% of which earn less than $40,000 per year. So a health care tax break doesn't help low-income workers. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
Yeah, democracy, it may return
Tiananmen Square
to the United States.
It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
No, I seriously believe.
Against disorder from the sirens night and day.
I seriously believe it may take a few more years. Day 7 here of corporate rule in America. It may take a few more years, but we will do it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Kate in Arcata, California, on the line with us. Hey, Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I have been realizing that the way I'm feeling is not necessarily grief and loss. It's betrayal by Kerry.
Because he conceded so quickly?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, what about I fought for America, you know, since, you know, I was young and I'll keep doing it. What about, you know, the fact that he went up against the authority of the whole system when he came back from Vietnam, and wasn't he the one in charge of the Iran-Contra?
Yeah, you know, Kate, I have to say, this is simply an article of faith on my part, but it's something that I really believe from everything that I know about John Kerry. And I don't know him personally, but, you know, everything that, you know, we've all observed him. I really believe that if any evidence, if any real, serious, solid evidence of voter fraud comes out that would have caused him to have won the election had it not happened, that he's going to be on this thing, and you know, a speech conceding in an election is not a legal document. This election has not been held. The elections for the House and Senate and all your local races, they have been held. The election for the President of the United States is held on December 13th or 14th, I forget which, and it's held by the Electoral College when the states send their electors to Washington, D.C., where they all meet in a room and they vote. And that has not happened yet. So, you know, it ain't over till it's over. Although, as you know, I think it's so important that we also consider, you know, that we not just, like, be living in denial, you know.
Right. Remember after 2000 and the big letdown and then kind of nobody really did anything.
Yeah.
Me of that thing you read the other day.
Well, I think people are going to be doing something. People are doing things right now. First of all, there's this enormous investigation into, you know, can we find quickly any evidence of this?
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
You know, you know, he's not going to walk away from this.
Great
job. Okay, thanks, Kate. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Boy, it's a tough time, but we'll make it through. We really will. This country is incredibly resilient, and we have it's burned into our DNA. Democracy is burned into our DNA. We will make it through.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of how can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to Win.
Labor's third party, Working Families.
The Working Families Party actually had a very good November 2nd, I think providing a bright spot for progressives.
Alex Navarro, communications director for the Working Families Party of New York. By endorsing the same candidates as the Democratic Party, Working Families added 150,000 votes, and Senator John Kerry won 120,000 on the party's line. The party says it's culturally conservative but economically populist, focusing on increasing the minimum wage and drug law reform, as in the David Soares campaign.
David Soares ran for the office of district attorney, won the general election, campaigning to reform the Rockefeller drug laws.
The Working Families Party is hoping Soares' victory in Albany County will be a catalyst in the state legislature on drug reform.
Nigerian oil workers who plan to completely shut down that country's ability to export oil next week have been threatened with job loss. Nigerian Labor Minister Hassan Lawal says workers who participate in the nationwide strike not only forfeit their pay, but also lose their right to continuous employment. Nigeria is the fifth biggest source of U.S. oil imports and exports more than 2.5 million barrels a day. The country's oil refineries are in disrepair and cannot produce enough oil to meet domestic demand, forcing the government to import oil and sell it at a loss.
If you use your Dell, Gateway, or IBM computer to browse the Internet for news, here's some you may never have seen. All those companies export American jobs. If you're in the market for a new PC and you support organized labor, you might be interested to know that union-built PCs offer an alternative to the other major PC makers, a union-made computer competitively priced. Union-built PC is organized by locals from the Communications Workers of America, IBEW, and UWUA.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Employees in workplaces with no smoking restrictions smoke almost 5 more cigarettes daily than those that work where there is a complete smoking ban. That's according to a study by the University of Toronto's Tobacco Research Unit. One of the study's authors, Dr. Thomas Stevens, says that smoking bans not only benefit the health of non-smokers, but they also benefit the health of the smokers themselves. Many provinces in Canada still allow smoking in the workplace.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Even though Washington is spending billions of our tax dollars to defend the homeland from a biological attack by foreign terrorists, our leaders were asleep at the switch on the need to defend us from a biological assault that everyone knew was coming. The flu. This is a deadly matter, for flu kills about 36,000 of us every year. Yet the White House and Congress were totally unprepared when a British factory that supplied half of our flu vaccinations was shut down because of contamination. This gross failure of leadership means that millions of Americans will not get the shots they need this winter, and many will die as a result. This crisis is the result of rank incompetence and ideological stupidity by our political leaders. Of course, these so-called leaders are now trying to dodge their responsibility, claiming the problems there were widely publicized months ago. Also, this is the second year in a row that our vaccine supply was botched. It's been a crisis waiting to happen, and now it has. But the real cause of the failure to protect our public health is Washington's insanely irrational pursuit of privatization and laissez-faire theory. Washington ideologues tied our nation's health to the profit whims of only two of the corporations that make flu shots, neither of which are even in the U.S. Other nations are not facing a flu shot crisis because they wisely get their medicines from many sources. Well, sniff the politicos, U.S. drug makers don't find flu shots a profitable enough business, so what could we do? Hello, gooberheads. It's time to admit that the profit motive does not always serve the public interest, especially on health care issues. When corporations fail to meet the need, government must. This is Jim Hightower saying, people should not be dying because politicians are more interested in protecting their ideological purity than in protecting public health.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens. Monday through Friday. Check your local listing.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends.
Trying to send an email there to Michael Moore, of all things. Tell him the article that he's got by me on his website has a few small errors in it. Time to fix it. Welcome back to our program. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into the chat room, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number if you'd like to call into the program. When a Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Massachusetts member suffers a stroke, the giant insurer pays the hospital $7,000, notes Boston Globe staff writer Liz Kowalski in an article published yesterday in the Boston Globe. Medicare pays an average of $5,400. However, keep in mind, $7,000 for Blue Cross, Medicare $5,400. But when John Hernan had a stroke, the bill for his hospital stay rang up to $23,280 plus an additional $23,018 for doctor's fees and 9 months of follow-up care. Why? Because he's uninsured. His bill was over $40,000 instead of the $7,000 that Blue Cross Blue Shield would pay. Welcome to the ownership society. George W. Bush wants us to have this owner, this marvelous, it's this ownership. No, we shouldn't be involved in health care, socialized medicine, single payer. No. Just let the corporations take care of it. Let the corporations take care of everything. The free market will do what's best. My friends, there is no such thing as a free market. The market is a creation of we the people. It's a creation of government. In order for there to be a marketplace, there must be a medium of exchange. There is a free market. The only kind of free market that exists is if you and I together decide that we're going to trade something back and forth. You know, just barter between individuals. That's it. But at the level of a nation, if you want a free market, or if you want a marketplace, you have to have rules for that marketplace. You have to have laws that determine how things get exchanged, how business is conducted. You have to have a medium of exchange which is consistent and steady and predictable and reliable. You have to have money, a money supply. You have to have banking systems. You have to have ways of punishing people who misuse the system or abuse the system. And there are a whole lot of necessary predicates for a marketplace. And what they all add up to is that there is no such thing as a free market. There is a market which is a creation of we the people saying, okay, here's the rules we're going to play by. And so to say, well, you know, we're going to solve all the medical problems of the people in the United States by just tossing them into the free market. We're going to let the free market's going to take is crazy. And guess what? We're seeing the results. I mean, when I was a kid growing up back in the 50s and 60s, if you wanted to run a hospital, it had to be a non-profit organization. If you wanted to run a health insurance company, it had to be a non-profit corporation in most states in the United States. Why? Because we wanted to be sure that the people who were providing us with health insurance and health care had as their first goal, their first mission, their main reason for existence to provide us with health care or health services. Not that their first goal was to make a profit. I mean, it's okay to have a staff and to pay them and all that kind of thing, but remember when people volunteered in hospitals? I mean, can you imagine somebody now volunteering in a hospital and knowing that that hospital CEO is making $20 million a year and that the hospital is siphoning off hundreds of millions of dollars a year to give to Bill Frist's family that might own it, and that the stockholders in the hospital are sitting around their pool getting their dividend checks, and there you are, one of those gray stripers volunteering in the hospital? So here we have a situation in America where if you're uninsured, not only are you uninsured, but you can plan on paying hugely higher health insurance costs. Hugely higher. Now, this doesn't count for the absolute most poor, you know, because they have Medicaid or Medicare. But the people in the middle, they're the ones who get squeezed. The people who can't quite afford the health insurance. This fellow John Hernan that the story's about, he's self-employed. He's got some rental properties, and he fixes up houses. He buys houses, fixes them up, and sells them. Can't afford insurance. He has a stroke. Bang, $40,000. Dr. David Torchina, chief executive of the Physicians Organization, defends charging self-pay patients more. He pointed out that Hernan made a conscious decision not to buy insurance. You see, it's your fault. You couldn't afford to buy the insurance? That's your fault. In George Bush's ownership society. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, or 802-229-2288. And Jeff in Denver, Colorado, I believe, is on the line. Hey, Jeff.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm fine. Hey, what's up?
Just report that many other states, such as Colorado here, we're working every day here tracking down the votes that happen here because we have a lot of voting anomalies here and within our state, too.
Uh-huh.
And so we're meeting almost every night, every other night.
Who's we?
Right now, that's what we're trying to find out. We're trying to coordinate the different groups. Actually, for people in Denver, there's a meeting tomorrow night. I believe it's 5:30 at the Mercury Cafe. And we're trying to find out everybody who is involved.
Interesting.
So we're trying to coordinate the different groups. Many of them we're just beginning to talk to, such as Common Cause and Truth. Move On and so forth, and find out their information, because we have all sorts of individuals. We have groups with different information, such as provisional ballots being left outside the voting precinct and things like that.
Right.
And then also we are seeing some patterns in precincts that don't necessarily make sense, just as we did in Florida. We're not sure yet, but we're trying to gather all that information. So we're working daily on this right now.
That's great. Any sense of timelines? Are you getting resistance from local officials? Are they cooperating? Is this something that's going to be very difficult, or is this something you can accomplish in a relatively short period of time?
This is the problem. Everything is happening so fast that we don't even have time to really coordinate.
Interesting.
We're just there's one woman who's last night appeared at one of the meetings who's been researching the primary votes that she says things didn't appear right in the primaries.
Hmm.
And we just suddenly got her information. Now we're trying to find out what our information is and the deadline. So just the coordination and moving on from there is very tough. But we are all doing it. We have, we perhaps have thousands of people. We're just trying to find out all the different groups that are doing things so we don't reinvent the wheel every time.
Yeah, I have sitting in my email inbox right now, Jeff, probably 600 emails from people saying, I read your article, you've identified the problem. Who do I talk to? Where do I go? Who do I send $10 to? How do we do something about this? And I've been basically telling people to go to Bev Harris's blackboxvoting.org site because although I know she's not Clearinghouse Central for this stuff, at least she's dealing with in my opinion, the larger systemic issue, which is why are corporations in the ballot, in the booth at all with us. Are you hearing that Common Cause or MoveOn.org, are you seeing that one of these national organizations is going to emerge and do something? Because I haven't heard peep from any.
We're all trying to figure that out. We're approaching them. We have members from these different groups appearing at our meetings.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to get them to go back and see what is this information so we can all come together as a unified force. Which also brings up another thing. You say you're getting so many emails. I would suggest to people stop writing to people like Nader and so forth and saying, do something, instead start helping.
Yeah, get out and do something
yourself. If you're going to write to somebody to say, do something, write to the media.
There you go.
But, we can't read every mail that says, go, 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 or whatever. We need people who are willing to go out there, go to the county clerk's office, and, get the voting records and so forth, file Freedom of Information Act requests, and things like that. We need numbers.
Is it the meetup group, the Dean's Old meetup groups, in some way responsible for pulling you all together? Or are you just doing this? Is this the remnants of the Democratic machine, as it were, that worked on the election?
This is this is remnants of all over the place. I mean, again, I haven't been in any of the coordinated groups, so I do not know what they're doing. I'm not sure what MoveOn is doing.
Yeah.
But we have people who are from the Democratic campaign, from the Kerry campaign. We have people from MOB, mm-hmm. others, opposed to Bush.
Yeah.
We have people from Common Cause. We have people from MoveOn. We're all showing up.
Yeah.
We're just trying to get coordinated. And
great. Well, Jeff, keep us up to date. Let us know how it shakes out and what happens.
Yeah, because there's a lot of strange things in Colorado and New Mexico, of course, as many things. I mean, that Sarpy County you're talking about is Nebraska.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Thanks for straightening that out. And here in Vermont, where in the small counties the votes are done by hand and counted by hand, in the rural, you know, they refer to it as the woodchucks area, the rural parts of Vermont, you know, that went overwhelming, you know, the places where you see these Take Back Vermont signs that are still going ballistic about the fact that civil unions happened here. In those parts of Vermont, we are seeing, we saw the Progressive Party actually picked up, I believe it was six seats in the House of Representatives at the state level. I mean, it's just remarkable. Jeff, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Billy in Santa Fe on the line, 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Billy, what's on your mind?
Good to talk to you, Tom. I read somewhere that Jeb Bush owns one of these voting machine companies. Do you know if that's true?
No, I don't. And frankly, I'd be surprised if that was the case. I know that one of the Bush brothers was involved in an IT company that was involved in something that had to do with, you know, education stuff that was, you know, sucking on the No Child Left Behind money. But I haven't heard about any of the Bush family being involved in the voting business.
Yeah, because it seems like that would be just out now.
Beyond that, I don't think they're that dumb. You know.
Right.
You know. Yeah. So I consider it unlikely. Sorry, Billy. It would have been a nice little conspiracy there, but, you know, that ain't how it's working out. Things finally are looking up at Lucian Technologies. I'm sure you'll be very pleased to hear this. The Chicago Tribune reporting. The telecommunications gear maker, whose profits more than tripled in the most recent quarter. Yes, the economy is good for multinational corporations. Yet Lucian's retirees, Barbara Rose in the Chicago Tribune notes, are not sharing in their company's improved fortunes. Thousands will see their health care costs rise in January when the company's most recent round of cuts to retirees' medical benefits takes effect. Robert Jarek, who worked for Lucient for 37 years, has seen monthly premiums for him and his wife soar from $32 a month when he retired 3.5 years ago to $577 per month. As the 61-year-old suburban countryside resident said, Lucian has forgotten about his retirees, as have many companies. People that made their companies what they are today have just been dismissed. In fact, it turns out, according to this article in the Chicago Tribune, 36% of large firms offer the benefit now, down from two-thirds in 1988, according to a 2004 study by the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation. The ranks of companies that are offering retirement benefits or any sort of benefits are diminishing while the profits of the companies are increasing. Why do you think that is? Well, I would suggest to you it has to do with the fact that organized labor is also diminishing, and that's the only barrier that we have to corporate greed. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Tonight, for the first time ever, Fear Factor goes to New York.
Yeah!
Fear Factor's biggest episode in the Big Apple.
Blended rat!
Then, a crime that started on Crossing Jordan ends on an all-new Las Vegas. Two shows, one murder.
How do you like Vegas so far?
Kind of reminds me of home.
Then, it's the premiere of the $25 million hoax. Fear Factor New York, Crossing Jordan on Las Vegas, and the $25 million hoax. All new NBC Tonight.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Got to go back. We got to go back. Got to go back. Got to go back. For the healing.
And welcome back.
Go on with the dreamer.
Yeah, dreaming about America. What could be, what will be. What will be. We go through these cycles. This country just goes through these cycles where it turns to the right and then it comes back to its senses and comes back to the values that it was founded on, and then it turns to the right and then it comes back to its senses. And we went through it with Joe McCarthy and that general insanity. We went through it during the McKinley era, during the Gilded Age, and we came back to our senses. We went through it in the 1840s and 1850s, and it produced a terrible war, and we came back to our senses. We will come back to our senses again. Trust me, it is inevitable. It's going to require effort on our part, but it's going to happen. Halliburton has acknowledged that payments this story is not going to go away. Everybody, as a political story, yeah. There's this French lawyer, the French magistrate, a judge in France, who has requested the presence of Mr. Cheney, our vice president, because he's investigating the possibility that Mr. Cheney was involved in criminal bribery activity in Nigeria. And this story came out about 4 or 5 months ago, lasted a day or so in the press, and then just kind of vanished. It's a big deal in France. And the judge keeps wanting to know why Mr. Cheney will not show up for his court appointments. Mr. Cheney doesn't seem to be answering the phone. And the allegation of this French judge was that when Cheney was running Halliburton, Halliburton paid $180 million in bribes to various folks in Nigeria in exchange for the right to participate in the oil business there, that was a crime, and that was a crime that was committed with the knowledge of senior management of Halliburton, an international felony. And today, in the Houston Business Journal, of all places, this story, Halliburton admits possibility of bribe payments. Halliburton has acknowledged that payments may have been made to Nigerian officials as part of an alleged $180 million bribery scandal, according to an SEC document filed by the Houston-based company on Friday. This is what Halliburton said, quote, "We understand from the ongoing governmental and other investigations that payments may have been made to Nigerian officials," end quote. Another, they're not going to own up to it. They're saying, we're discovering that the government discovered that we did something wrong when Dick Cheney was running our company. The SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the Department of Justice under Mr. Ashcroft, Nigerian officials, and, of course, this French magistrate are all investigating these payments that Halliburton made from 1995 to 2002 in connection with the construction and subsequent expansion of TSKJ. This is one of these... This is how Cheney did it. This is how Halliburton is able to take our tax dollars, billions of our tax dollars, to provide services in Iraq, make a huge profit, and pay no taxes on it. And they do it by creating these spin-off companies that they create offshore. TKSJ is a private limited liability company registered in Madeira, Portugal, whose members are Technic SA of France, Snap Negreta, which is an affiliate of SPA and ENI SPA of Italy, JGC Corporation of Japan, and Kellogg Brown and Root. That, of course, being the division, is it the Cayman Islands or the Bahamas, division of Halliburton. And so, you know, on it goes. The story goes on and on and on. Why are we allowing? Why, I ask, he asks rhetorically, why are we allowing corporations in the United States to get government contracts and not pay taxes on the profit that they make from it? This was, of course, why, not to beat a dead horse, but why John Kerry voted against the $87 billion, as it were, in part. That and the fact that it was being financed by our grandchildren rather than us. It's amazing. It's amazing. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Stick around.
Tonight, for the first time ever, Fear Factor goes to New York.
Yes!
Fear Factor's biggest episode in the Big Apple.
Blended Rat!
Then, a crime that started on Crossing Jordan ends on an all-new Las Vegas. Two shows, one murder.
How do you like Vegas so far?
Kind of reminds me of home.
Then, it's the premiere of the $25 million hoax. Fear Factor New York, Crossing Jordan on Las Vegas, and the $25 million hoax, all-new NBC Tonight.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The U.S. Supreme Court declined on Monday to review four discrimination cases that resulted in judgments where workers received thousands of dollars. The employers say that the decisions should have been determined by a jury and not just judges. The four Massachusetts companies were trying to determine the constitutionality of a state law that allows workers to choose between a judge or a jury when presenting discrimination claims. It does not give employers the same right, and they claim it is not equal protection.
Labor's candidate didn't win the presidency, but this year's election was a win for New York Labor's third party, Working Families.
The Working Families Party actually had a very good November 2nd, I think providing a bright spot for progressives.
Alex Navarro, communications director for the Working Families Party of New York. By endorsing the same candidates as the Democratic Party, Working Families added 150,000 votes, and Senator John Kerry won 120,000 on the party's line. The party says it's culturally conservative but economically populist, focusing on increasing the minimum wage and drug law reform, as in the David Soares campaign.
David Soares ran for the office of district attorney, won the general election, campaigning to reform the Rockefeller drug laws.
The Working Families Party is hoping Soares' victory in Albany County will be a catalyst in the state legislature on drug reform.
Nigerian oil workers who plan to completely shut down that country's ability to export oil next week have been threatened with job loss. Nigerian Labor Minister Hassan Lawal says workers who participate in the nationwide strike not only forfeit their pay, but also lose their right to continuous employment. Nigeria is the fifth biggest source of U.S. oil imports and exports more than 2.5 million barrels a day. The country's oil refineries are in disrepair and cannot produce enough oil to meet domestic demand, forcing the government to import oil and sell it at a loss.
If you use your Dell, Gateway, or IBM computer to browse the Internet for news, here's some you may never have seen. All those companies export American jobs. If you're in the market for a new PC and you support organized labor, you might be interested to know that union-built PCs offer an alternative to the other major PC makers, a union-made computer competitively priced. Union-built PC is organized by locals from the Communications Workers of America, IBEW, and UWUA.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Employees in workplaces with no smoking restrictions smoke almost five more cigarettes daily than those that work where there is a complete smoking ban. That's according to a study by the University of Toronto's Tobacco Research Unit. One of the study's authors, Dr. Thomas Stevens, says that smoking bans not only benefit the health of non-smokers, but they also benefit the health of the smokers themselves. Many provinces in Canada still allow smoking in the workplace.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Yes, indeed. The largest oil companies, by the way, you wonder why the price of gasoline is going up. Well, the price of oil has gone up somewhat, but look at this. With crude oil trading at $5 a barrel and natural gas at $8 a thousand cubic feet. The roll call of the big multinationals, including ExxonMobil Corp, with net income up 56% to $5.68 billion. ConocoPhillips up 54% to $2 billion. BP up 91% to $4.48 billion. And Chevron Texaco up 62% to $3.2 billion. The John S. Herald consulting firm, this is from an article in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram by Dan Piller. The John S. Herald consulting firm estimates that the seven largest multinationals will generate $71.3 billion in free cash this year. You know, I always wondered why ConocoPhillips was running ads on the political shows on CNN constantly for their, you know, we're wonderful people, when they don't have anything to sell to me. They weren't saying, please buy gasoline at a Phillips 66 station. So why are they throwing all this money at CNN when they're not trying to sell anything? Could it be that they don't want the mainstream media to report the fact that their profits are up 54% to $2 billion while gas prices are going up? Maybe not. Maybe not. Might not have anything to do with that. But, well, this article notes, these major oil companies have all moved to shore up their equity bases with dividend increases. In other words, those people who make their living sitting around the pool waiting for the check to arrive from ConocoPhillips or ExxonMobil or Chevron Texaco, they're getting much larger checks, and thanks to George W. Bush, the most in taxes that they have to pay on them now is 15% and no payroll tax. Life is good if you're a billionaire. Life is really good under the Bush administration. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, or 802-229-2288. And Patrick in Albuquerque, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Patrick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
Well, I had a couple questions for you. First off, I saw you like a week ago on C-SPAN and fell in love with your show. So
thank you.
Just wanted to start that off with that. One of the things I was thinking of, you know, there was like millions, literally millions of us out there protesting Iraq before we went over there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it seems to me that the neocons have kind of figured out that as long as we're not really doing anything other than just standing around and shouting, you know, like that, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
that if they just ignore us, nothing's going to happen. And my second point is...
Well, let's just deal with that for a second. First of all,
okay.
You know, I think that they may think that. But it's not what's happening. What I'm seeing is just, you know, frenetic activity. First of all, people trying to investigate whether or not the vote was stolen, you know, that whole issue.
Right.
There is this kind of almost underground movement. I mean, you know, that broke surface. In this election, with MoveOn.org and the Dean groups and the meetup groups and all, I mean, it's just like it came together behind John Kerry, and more people turned out to vote for John Kerry than, you know, other than George W. Bush, which we have to acknowledge, than have ever voted for anybody for president of the United States in history. I mean, there's a huge number of people who got very, very active this year. We're still here. And I am certain that what we are going to see is as we move into the next year, and the conservatives start pushing their legislative agenda of privatizing Social Security, making Medicare, you know, making medical care even less available to people in the middle class, you know, flattening the tax rates so that the middle class is bearing an even greater burden and the rich a smaller burden, reducing taxes on corporations, and on, you know, that there's going to be blowback. We're going to see really significant blowback.
Well, I certainly hope you're right, you know, and I really hate to sound pessimistic, but it seems like a lot of these things have been going on and nothing's happening. And, you know, the sad thing is, you know, like you were talking about in one of your earlier programs, is that the Christians have been, you know, the fundamentalist Christians have been mobilized, and they're bought and sold, you know, or they've been bought and sold, and the Republicans own them now.
Yeah, well, yes and no.
You know,
see,
I mean,
here's
a good-sized portion of the country.
Patrick, yes, it is.
How do you get
However,
to
Patrick,
those
people? More, you know, if you just want to talk about Christians, more Christians who go to church regularly voted for John Kerry than voted for George Bush.
Well, okay.
I mean, it's a statistic you're probably not hearing in the analysis that come out of the Republican talking points that are fed to the media, but it's true.
Well, that's it. You know, our medias are pretty much owned and controlled by the Republicans.
Well, they're owned and controlled by very large corporations who have congruent interests with the Republicans. Let's put it that way, because that's the fact, and there's no conspiracy theory in that at all.
Right. Well, let's say you are correct, and you know this big movement, this big wave is coming, and let's say, for example, like before Bush is put in office on the 20th of January, before he's inaugurated, right?
Yeah.
If let's say voter fraud is found, we found the smoking gun. And Kerry was supposed to win. What legally happens at that point?
Well, then
nobody's really brought that up.
That's a good question because we have never confronted that before in the United States.
In our history, right?
Yeah, and but something will happen. I guarantee you that. It's not like we're, you know, Kerry or the Democrats or anybody else are going to sit around with their thumbs in their ears. I mean, it's not, people are going to respond to this. It's if
we
that is found. Frankly,
with Gore.
Yeah, but the problem was it came too far after the fact. I mean, the evidence that Greg Palast uncovered of the ripoff in Florida, unfortunately, it came too late. I mean, you know, I realize that he was doing that BBC report fairly early on, but
right.
But it was after the Electoral College had voted on, and see, because the vote for president, here's, you have to keep in mind, the vote for president of the United States has not yet happened. The vote for president of the United States happens on December 13th or 14th in Washington, D.C., when the electors from each one of the states get together and cast their vote. That's when the official vote for president of the United States happens. It has
well,
not...
If these people can get this really moving and actually find that, you know, quote-unquote, smoking gun...
Assuming it's there. But again, I'm writing articles about this. I mean, I'm encouraging people to really get out there and find that if it's there. And at the same time, I think we also have to say, you know, maybe there is no smoking gun. Maybe George Bush won this election fair and square, the old-fashioned way, by carpet-bombing people with advertising and saying whatever it took to get elected. You know, building coalitions and splitting and dividing and all. You know, we can complain about it, but, you know, maybe it just really happened, and we need to get to work. We need to get back to coalition building. We need to be doing the stuff
Absolutely.
That the suffrage movement was doing, that the abolition movement was doing, that the civil rights movement was doing, that the labor movement did. The labor movement needs to be doing this all over again. And and the anti-Vietnam War movement, for that matter. We need to be at the grassroots level, organizing, getting active, waking people up, sharing with people the reality of what's going on. And I'm seeing a lot of that happening on the internet right now. I'm absolutely convinced that people are not just going to walk away from this and go, wake me up in 4 years. I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, you think America's waking up from its apathy?
That's right. That's absolutely right. And I think
we've been pretty apathetic for the past couple of decades about voting and like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you know, ever since Reagan came in with a conservative agenda, you know, this huge anti-labor, you know, declaring war on the middle class and organized labor and whatnot. And it's really taken this long for people to realize that there is a conservative economic agenda and that it basically is replace the middle class with the working poor and let the wealthy get just vastly wealthier and give control of the United States government over to private corporations. And, you know, you can boil it down to that in a nutshell. They've got all these fancy words for it and all these fancy ways of saying, well, you know, no, it's really about abortion. It's really about gay rights. It's really, or you know, gay marriage and blah, blah, blah. Those are the red herrings.
They've got so many of those. I mean, Karl Rove may be a lot of things, but he's not a dummy.
That's right.
If there is a smoking gun, he's probably covered his tracks pretty well.
Yeah, well,
you would think, right?
Yeah, and that's why I say, you know, whether or not there was fraud, we have to be doing the work on the assumption that there was no fraud. In other words, we shouldn't put our lives on hold. We shouldn't put our activism on hold in the hope that we're going to find some smoking gun. We need to continue these activities. You know, the Dean for America or Democracy for America now, Howard Dean's group, they're still mobilized. The Green Party's still out there and it's active. The Democratic Party actually has some cash now. This is a great time for progressives and activists to infiltrate the Democratic Party. Volunteer. Show up. We could literally take this party over, just like the conservatives took over the Republican Party in the early 1970s after Barry Goldwater went down in flames. Why not do that? We can do it. And I, frankly, you know, you listen to calls coming to this program, I see it happening.
Well, one big difference, however, is that, like, you mentioned Vietnam and stuff, and, you know, a lot of the protesters went out there, we marched on Washington.
Yeah, there was a focus. There was a point of focus.
We helped bring about a change, but we don't own the media anymore.
Well, we didn't own the media then either, you know, although there was that sense back in the 60s and 70s, right up through 86, 87, when Reagan, you know, changed the telecommunications laws, took out the Fairness Doctrine. There was that sense that news was sacrosanct and the best and all that kind of thing. And that, of course, has gone by the wayside. Now so much news is infotainment. But the good news is that the blogosphere, the Internet, whatever you want to call it, has cut through so much of that and is defining, you know, pretty rigorous standards of journalism. I mean, you know, you read something, for example, on commondreams.org, you know, it's pretty solid stuff. I'm optimistic. I'm not just blowing smoke here. I see a movement forming. And frankly, the only thing that I'm uncertain about is what it's going to form around. It's like there's all these metal filings and the magnet hasn't come down to the table yet. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, the energy is there, the people are there, and who are they? You know, they organized around MoveOn.org last, you know, and even during the Clinton impeachment stuff. What is going to be the thing that brings all these people together? Is it going to be, for example, left-wing talk radio? Is it going to be like programs like this in Air America and stuff like that? Is it going to be some candidate, some person, Howard Dean taking over the DNC and re-energizing it? I mean, that's a very real possibility in my mind. That would go a long way toward what I'm talking about. But there is a fight going on right now for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party between the corporatists, the Democratic Leadership Council or Committee, and the old-fashioned kind of labor coalition. We're here for the people, folks, and we need to show up for that fight. We need to get out there and get active. Patrick, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
All right.
Good to
Thank
hear from you. I do appreciate it. 15 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894 or 802-229-2288. Ann in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Ann, welcome to the program. Ann? Oh, I'm sorry. That's Ed in California. Ann's on another button there.
No, that's me then.
That's you then.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good morning.
Hey,
two
Ed.
Quick points. My son brought up to me the other day, Bush did not win a mandate. He won by 135,000 votes in Ohio for the Electoral College.
Well, and on the other side, he won by several million votes in the popular vote. Here's the question.
Don't count what does
if you want it to. Here's the question, Ed. What does the word mandate mean?
How to describe it? I don't know.
Exactly. It's meaningless. It's meaningless. And it's a one that when they're these guys are running around going, "Oh, we got a mandate." What they're really saying is, "We're going to shove it down your throat whether you like it or not. We have the right to ignore what the rest of America thinks." That's what they're saying.
Point.
And I tell them when they try and do that, they've got a big surprise coming.
I got one other point, please.
Yes, sir.
The reason why it's 50-50, 50% of America doesn't have a computer.
Could be.
And you're addressing the same 50% that voted 50%.
Yeah, could be. It just came to me
when you were talking about computers and stuff like this. Most of the right, perhaps, you know, it's divided in the country, and that's about where we are with computers.
I think, you know, it may be a factor. It may be, and it would be really interesting to see some stats on that, Ed. I think, though, that and thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good
appreciate it, Tom. Thanks.
Yeah. But I think that a larger issue is the misinformation campaign that was run, and frankly, I lay a lot of that at the feet of Fox News, right-wing talk radio, and the RNC, and its head, former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie. Let's go to Ann in Sarasota this time. Hey, Ann.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to make a comment about the call before the last one real quick. I disagree with you guys, what you were saying, that we should assume that the election was legit.
No, I'm not saying we should assume it. I'm saying we should behave as if we were assuming that it was.
Okay, but I look at it a little bit different. I say there's enough evidence to prove that there was vote fraud, so we need to deal with that fraud and fix it before the next election.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, there's no point of voting because they're just going to fix it again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And if you understood me to mean that in the realm of doing something about the fact that we've got corporations in the voting booth with us and this stuff is insecure, that we should simply, you know, say, oh, no problem, let's move on. That's not what I meant to say.
Okay.
What,
right.
You know, because I absolutely agree with you. We need to be aggressively addressing this problem and aggressively doing something about it. What I was talking about is this. You know, all the emails that I get, the discussion in the chat room, the callers to this program who are either in despair or who are in rage. And I don't think either one of those emotions are particularly useful at this point in time. And the in despair folks and the enraged folks, it's really useful, I think, right at now for us to say, okay, let's how would we behave? What would we be doing? If we knew for a certainty that the George Bush and the Republicans actually won the election fair and square, what would we be doing? And we need to do that. At the same time, and that in my mind is organize, mobilize, educate, right? And we need to do that at the same time that we're cleaning up the problem of the election mess. And maybe maybe we'll find some flowers as we start cleaning out all this compost of the election mess. Maybe not. But I agree with you. We do need to clean that up.
Okay, one other quick thing I wanted to bring up about the poor gentleman that had the horrendous medical bills.
Yeah.
My husband had a heart attack, and we thought we had insurance, and we found out our insurance wasn't as great as it was, and we had like $70,000 worth of bills to deal with.
Yep.
My problem with what Bush is wanting to do is he didn't even mention Social Security and privatizing it in his campaign.
I know.
Yet he's trying to take us in the direction of privatizing Social Security, privatizing medicine.
And everything else, Ann, and everything else. And it's wrong. It's a violation of our nation's values.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique. If you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
This is a Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A recent report released by the Sierra Club, the United Steelworkers, SEIU, Unite Here, and others reveals clean energy policies would create at least a million new jobs in the United States.
Clean energy policies will create 1.4 million new jobs nationwide once the policies are implemented. These are policies for clean cars and clean energy.
Dan Becker, director of the Global Warming Program at the Sierra Club.
What the study did was it looked at what happens when we save energy. When you have a car that uses less gas, you're saving money on the gasoline. When you have refrigerators and light bulbs and other appliances that use less electricity, you're saving money on electricity. Rather than exporting that money to the Persian Gulf for oil or out of state to an electric utility, you get to spend that money on something else.
The report found that American households would save more than $1,000 annually by 2025. And Becker says increased consumer buying power helps all workers by creating jobs.
I think it became very clear that manufacturing jobs were being eroded not by environmental regulation in the United States, but by faulty trade agreements.
David Foster, District 11 Director for the United Steelworkers, sees a shift in the way union members view the environment.
We lost 3,500 steelworker jobs in the state of Minnesota. Every single one of them was lost because of trade agreements. Not a one of them was lost because of American environmental regulation.
In addition to increased jobs, Becker says clean energy policies would reduce global warming and protect the quality of our air, drinking water, and food.
No one knows better than workers that we need a clean environment. And the good news from this study is that we can have a clean environment and more jobs, that the two go hand in hand, and that's good for all of us.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and Jerry in Boulder Creek, California on the line. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the program.
Tom, pleasure to finally talk with you.
As you know, I've been a real big fan of two articles that you've written, one the Henry Wallace article and the other, which needs more play after 2 years, you know, when democracy fails.
Oh, yeah.
So although I would really like to agree with your take heart attitude, I really can't because I see too many parallels in terms of the snowball rolling down the hill. But I do have a suggestion.
Sure. Let me before you get to that, though, let me just toss in one huge caveat. When democracy failed, of course, is the story about the parallels between the rise of Hitler in Germany and the rise of Bush in the United States.
Right.
And there's a huge difference between the United States and Germany. When Hitler came to power in Germany, the German democracy had been a wobbly experiment for about one generation prior to World War I, and it collapsed. And, you know, was under assault, the Treaty of Versailles. They were being terribly punished for World War I. And the Germans really wanted a king again. They had had a king for 1,000 years, and they wanted another king. Here in the United States, we have a 230-year history of rejecting kings. And that's why I think that I don't think we're going to go down the same road. I think we'll get to the point where it becomes clear to enough people that we're heading down that road. And I think that it's awful clear to a lot of people right now. And that's
here's my suggestion.
Go ahead.
I used to work at the AFL-CIO in Washington. I want to speak to the truck driver from Grand Rapids who was on earlier, because what we need, if we can't have a movement that can match them in money, we need a movement that can match what the right wing has done in terms of energy. And I think the other thing that we need that's very important is we need a personality of equal stature to stand up, whether it's an Oprah Winfrey or a Colin Powell, you know, or someone like Walter Cronkite, who really did start to make some noise before this election, who can garner the interest of the guy who is not an intellectual person,
yeah,
who is deeply concerned and who sits in front of his television set, you know, picking up what it is that he can.
I agree, Jerry, and there's really two ways that that happens. One is via the media, and this is one of the ways that the right wing took over, and that is, for example, talk radio. This medium, this is the only of the hot medium, of the major mediums, this is the only one where you can just rant about politics for hours at a time. And the second is around specific issues, whether it's labor issues or medical issues or whatever. And frankly, I think that we need a strategy that encompasses all those. Jerry, I'm sorry we're out of time, but good talking to you too. We can talk again as time goes on. You know the number. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira for engineering it, to Brad for our music, to Shelby for streaming us, to Ben Birch for our archives, and Mike Toth, the folks in our chat room, to Jay for our music, and to you for showing up. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.